Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 8th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, send it to questions, plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Ephesians chapter 6. We're going to read verses 1 through 20. I'm not too sure whether I've read this recently or not over the air. When I was looking, reading today, I found that these verses, and they're very familiar. I know I've read them recently, but I don't know whether I read them on a Monday night recently. But if so, it's good verses anyway. Okay, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness in this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day. And having done all to stand, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplates of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, take in the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, and take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication of all saints. And for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. Okay, that was Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 20. And you know, I'd like to read just a couple of verses back out of this one more time, because I think this is something we really, really need to appreciate and understand what this means, because we indeed are in the evil day. Are we going to end up standing? You know, we have to stand on righteousness, on justice. We have to stand on Christ, on God, on the creator of the universe, on his word. Verse 11, put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Because we wrestle not against flesh, not against the blood, but against spiritual wickedness in high places, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world. So that's what we indeed are up against, and we are in the day of darkness. You know, we look out into the world, and it looks pretty grim. You know, let's see where we're going to pick up on this first. Yeah, you can have that. Let's just talk a little bit about that and where we're at. And I was looking at a, well, Gerard had shared this with me. Hopefully it's up on, yeah, okay, it is. It's up on my screen still. Friday, September 30th, 2016. D-Day for the U.S. dollar. We got a date. What exactly that means, I don't know. I haven't read through this whole article yet, and we will post this information up on our website. Jen, when you do the next newsletter, get a hold of me with this link, and let's make sure we get this link out there. People should read it. But we will post something on our website concerning this.
Okay.
We know that May 28th was something, and if anything, it was the debt was due and didn't get paid. If anything, that's what it was. We hear about foreclosures. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that happened or where that is or what it means. But this is a real serious thing coming from a very good source. September 30th, 2016, he even gives a time, 4 p.m., is when it's going to break loose on September 30th. I don't know whether that day could be pushed or not. We are out of time, people. There is no more time. And so what are we to do? Well, we need to prepare. That's the only thing we can do. You know, we need to prepare. You know, there is that quote. I'll try to look it up when I get a chance, a break, and I'll read it completely. Or maybe someone can look it up for me and read it. It's a Kennedy quote. I know we have it. We wrote it down in our handbook. For the COS, the COS handbook. And basically, in the Kennedy quote, he talks about a revolution. And he says it can't be stopped. It will not be stopped. A revolution is coming. Whether it's going to be a bloody one or a peaceful revolution, if we're wise enough, it's up to you. So that's the big question. From reading what I've read on this, and I haven't read through this whole article yet, it appears that really we're going to head into very quickly hyperinflation. You know, you're going to go buy a cup of coffee for $6. And I think that would be cheap, to be honest with you, because I think it's going to be a lot worse than that. But it's going to get worse. There's no doubt about it. Is that what it means in the beginning? Are we going to have a few more months, another 3 months or 6 months before it really gets that bad? Is it going to be sort of a slow thing, or is it going to be something quick? And, you know, is it going to be a national emergency across the nation immediately? Look it. The collapse of the dollar is coming. There's no getting away from it. You cannot escape it. And there are some things we can do. And the key thing is preparing for this. But there's other things we can do. There's things we could do. We could talk to Congress. We may have a inside to Congress. And everything that we filed, and this Jen, maybe you can tell us a little bit about this situation where we may be able to get some information into Congress, where they'll put it onto the records. Do I have that correct? Everything we filed in the courts?
Right. Senator Grassley, who's head of the Judiciary Committee, has set up a web email address where you can send in things like if we gathered up our affidavits and the documents that we have filed, send them in to him. It can go into the congressional record. And if they choose, then with a little prodding, they can investigate as to why they're not filed and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's something we could do. We need to do that. Okay. But there's more things we need to do. We have, I haven't read through this whole article, but from skimming through it and getting a little information from what Gerard told me about. Gerard, if you're live here with us, you can kind of correct me if I go off the road here. But basically, other countries have kind of thrown their hat into a safety net kind of thing. And the United States has not signed on to it. I believe that's the case. And again, I'll be corrected if that's wrong. If not tonight, by next week, it'll be corrected because I will make the note. But I do want to get this information out there. We need to be thinking about this.
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on. You've got a basket of currency that's gold-backed. But then there's also this digital money that the IMF is putting in that they want. And what's going to happen on September 30th is countries, between countries, they're not going to accept the American dollar anymore. Their dollar will no longer be the world's reserve currency. Now, that will show up slowly, but, you know, and then accelerate as people catch on. So that money that they're going to be dealing with is a special drawing right that's been set up through the World Bank. And what it does is it replaces the American dollar. That's a scary thing because that makes us a third world country. So how that unfolds and you know, what happens as that's unfolding is very scary. You know, so look, we need a gold-backed money somehow. They never wanted that. They killed Kennedy for that. They kill anybody that talks about it. You know, when Saddam Hussein said he was only going to accept gold from oil, that was the end of him. Same thing with Gaddafi. So they don't want gold. They want their digital money. But because we've defaulted and because the American dollar is so bad, and this is part of the plan, that's going to push America out of the way as a world superpower. Then they can go do what they want to do without us being there. So basically, that's it. You have two or three different factions up there fighting to see who can fill this vacuum, because that's what it is. It's a vacuum. When we default and our dollar defaults, there's a vacuum. And look, they're not all together on the top. There's different factions, you know what I mean? There's no honor among thieves. So they're fighting to see who gets in. So, you know, we're gonna once we go, the whole world's gonna go, because right now the American dollar is the world reserve currency. So as they replace that, the one that's gonna get hurt the worst is America, because we haven't got on with making our money, you know, worth anything legal tender, and we don't make anything in this country anymore hardly. So that's a problem. We don't make nuts and bolts, we don't make anything like that. And so I don't know what we're going to do. But anyway, go ahead, John.
Right, and that's an interesting point. We don't make nuts and bolts anymore. We used to be. We used to, you know, be the manufacturer of the world. And we no longer are, and that is by design. There is a conspiracy in this country. It's been around for as long as we've been alive, working and chiseling away, destroying America, destroying our economy, destroying our strength, our power, destroying our patriotism, destroying our morality, destroying our lives, destroying our future, destroying our children, destroying our morality, just destroying everything, destructive. This administration has done nothing but expose us, to put us into jeopardy, to put us into places, into arm's way. And there is no salvation through this administration. They're not going to lift a finger to help. If anything, they'll lift a finger to destroy us further than what they can. Because these people that are in control are not Americans. They hate America, and they hate liberty, they hate you, and they hate me, and they hate God. That's it. There's nothing. It doesn't get any simpler than that. Congress has totally lost their way. They're worthless. They can't lift a finger to do anything. They won't. They're totally captured by the whole process. We only have one possibility in this channel to try to help to do something, and that is the governors. We have sent a letter to the governor. You know, we've spoken to others who have told us that, you know, be careful what you do, say to the governors, we don't want to upset them, we want them to get on board. Well, are they on board? Why aren't they on board? Look, we need to send some papers to the governor. We need to make it official. Really hardcore papers, letting them know what they need to do. And at the end results, depending on what they do after this calamity that hits America, we're going to be looking for trials, and they're going to be responsible. We need to put them on notice, let them know at the end of the day they're going to be held responsible. They need to step up and do the right thing. The governors, they are the leaders of free, sovereign states. Every state is a country on it to its own. We are the United States of America. We're a union of countries come together in a way that no other country, a nation, has ever come together before. You know, I can pick up routes an hour after this program and head into Jersey, and I'm that's it. I'm a New Jerseyan, and I'm a New Jerseyan. Any rights anybody in New Jersey has, I have, or Texas or California. It doesn't matter where I go. Okay, that's the kind of connection we have, the ties, the bonds we have between states. But each state is a sovereign state unto its own. And it's time that our governors get a spine. It's time that they step up and do something. Now, I don't know exactly what they could be doing, but I'm going to be researching and others will be researching to see what this is all about. Maybe talk to some individuals. Maybe we can even get some people in Congress. We get our papers into Congress, and we'll put the call out to them. Hey, you're not going to be able to collectively work together to do anything good for America. You're a lost cause, but individually you can. You can step up and get behind the governors of your state. You can push them. Let's work in our states. The hell with the federal government at this point. We'll fix that later. There's nothing we could do there. There's nothing they can do there anymore. They need to be working with their governors. Forget about going to Washington tomorrow morning to work, tell our senators and our congressmen. Let it be an empty hall. Go up to your governor. Talk with them. Let's get something going on a state level. Let's save America. Let's do it ourselves. So we'll try to put something together if we can, and we'll get it out. But again, we're back to money. So, I hate to bring money up all the time, but there's no other choice. I do want to say to everyone that we have caught up on our bills. We've had a couple of people who've been very generous, one person in particular. And one person had given us $1,000 that really helped us to get over the edge. And we're caught up on the bills. And so we got a clean slate at the moment. But we have to make sure we have the right enough income coming in on a monthly basis to be able to keep the doors open. But we also need more money to get papers out. You know, papers cost money, toner costs money, and stamps cost money, envelopes cost money. You know, pretty much we're doing what we can on a volunteer basis. It slows things down a little bit because we don't have the staff to work with, but we get it done. We can get it done. Those of us who are working on that level are willing to work literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if that's what's necessary. We'll take cat naps. I've been doing that for a long time. I was so exhausted the other night on Thursday night. I sat down at 6:30 and I fell asleep, and that was it. I was supposed to be on a 9 o'clock call. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was just totally exhausted. And I'm not the only one. There are others doing this. But some people, they're not giving any time into this thing. Shame on you if you're not giving time. Shame on you now that you know, and if you're not giving time. Shame on you if you don't do anything to step up for this nation right now. Because we got a problem. And we need to be wise enough to make this a peaceful revolution. To make this a soft landing. To protect our Constitution. To protect ourselves and our posterity, to protect our neighbors. But only if you do something now. Tomorrow is going to be too late. We're moving through the nation in every state of the union developing committees of safety. And I'm not going to rest until I get it done in New York. We've had some setbacks in New York, but hey, that's life. I don't care. I pick up and keep going. We'll get a lot of successes. We're going to get New York done. What about your state? What are you going to do? And New Yorkers, give me calls. Let me know you're out there to help me. Let's set me up some dates. Let's get going with this thing. We're out of time. Look, we have to protect ourselves at the grassroots in our own communities. If we don't protect our communities, we can't protect anything. It's all on the grassroots. It's all in our communities. It's all working things out with the sheriff. It's as simple as getting the sheriff to understand the constitutional chain of command in an emergency situation. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. With that knowledge is all it takes to save your community, to save your county, to save your state, to save the United States of America. It's that simple. Don't think of this as being complex. You know, to the oath keepers out there, I call out to you people to tell you, hey, don't prepare for war. Let's prepare for peace. You know, it seems that the oath keepers, and I'm sad to say, have gotten to that point that they kind of think there's no answer out there. Well, look at what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. Let's be wise. Let's make this a peaceful revolution. Yeah, prepare for war. I agree with that. I'm prepared for war. Do what you got to do on that end. Everyone should be prepared for war because we don't know what the end results is going to be. But we also should be preparing for peace. So Oath Keepers, get connected with National Liberty Alliance. Get the leadership out there. I don't know what's wrong with the leadership out there, to be honest with you. They're just not paying attention. They're so focused in on the wrong direction. Take a look on the other side of things. There is a peaceful solution, and you need to work with your sheriff, because that's where the Oath Keepers should be. They should be with their sheriffs. They should be working with the committees of safety, organizing, preparing the community, making it safe, the committees of safety, making their community safe. Being prepared to let the sheriff know, Posse Comitatus, give us a call if you need us. We're here. Roll up the sleeves, get ready to rebuild, because destruction is coming. So, committees of safety. It's that simple. On this Thursday, I'm going to be talking in depth on the plan for the committees of safety. It's written in a book. There's a few little things I realize may be missing in that book, and we'll kind of update that book, put a few pages in there, and stick it in. But we're going to give the basic plan in a nutshell. I'm going to give it in a very short nutshell right here, right now, okay? It's as simple and as little as getting everybody to understand the constitutional authority chain of command. It's that simple. You only need a half a dozen people to get the Committee of Safety going. Five people to get it going, filling five chairs. The chairman, the co-chairman, the secretary, the treasurer, and the Committee of Correspondence chair. Five people. Okay, that's all it takes. You get those five people together, and they get together, and they sign the charter. The charter is already created. All you have to do is read it, agree on it, and sign it. It's a framework that no one would disagree with. You can add to that charter as time goes on. But right now, get the charter signed and done. Go buy yourself a seal and put a seal on that. Put your signatures on that. The resolution. We've laid out a framework of a resolution for every county. Every county would agree. There's nothing in there that anybody with common sense would disagree with. Nothing at all. It's all there to protect the people, to protect the community, to protect the Constitution, to protect the American way of life. So get that. Get it signed by those five individuals. And as you're working on this, you'll be building up a membership. You're looking to get one or two or more people in every town in your county, in every city in your county. Again, I'll go back to Dutchess County where I'm at. 19 towns, 2 cities, 21 communities. We need 21 people. That's what we need. Okay, 21 people. That's all it'll take to save your entire county, and I'll tell you how. Okay, and you don't even need the 21. You could do it with the 5, but you're going to gain momentum. You know, we see some of the committees of safety that's been out there now some months, and they're not necessarily doing it right, and they've got some bad leadership that have taught them the wrong things to do, but be that as it may, you know, they're up to 150-plus people. I heard something bigger than that. I'm not sure, but 150-plus people, okay? We could do that a lot quicker in any of our counties once we get this ball rolling. But all you need is a handful of people. That's all you need. And then you take your charter, and you take your resolution, and you take your committee handbook, and you take the power of the sheriff paper, and you deliver it to the sheriff. You get a 10-minute meeting with him, just a preparation meeting to let him know that we want to get together to talk in one of the committee meetings, but we first like to get together, introduce ourselves to him, give him some literature so he can study up on us, see who we are, understand what we're doing, and then we'll set a meeting. Give him all the literature right up front. Everything in there will sell them on what we're doing, because it's all about the Constitution. It's all about the authority, the power, an emergency status situation. What is the chain of command in your county? Who is in charge and who is responsible to make sure at the end of the day the Constitution still stands? Who is that person? It's the county sheriff. He needs to understand this. And then he needs to sign our resolution. I'm convinced, unless he's the enemy himself, and we will have some that are the enemy, I'm sorry to say, go beyond him and go to the undersheriff. Go to a deputy, someone that will take the responsibility and take charge when the stuff really gets bad, and reject and refuse and say, no, you're not obeying the Constitution, and take charge of that county hopefully some way. But look, generally speaking, the sheriffs will be on. When they read this stuff and they understand what's going on, if they look at this and they come to the meeting, they will sign on. And once you have the sheriff's signature on that resolution, then you visit every town and every city in your county. You make a meeting with the county leaders, and you ask them to sign on to our resolution, to get together as a group, to agree. You guys got it all figured out what to do in an emergency. You got all the federal help that they want to give you. Take it all. Take everything they give you. Fine, that's good, especially during the emergency. But don't give up your power and don't give up your authority. That's unconstitutional. That's destruction. Martial law only means a nation under siege. That's what martial law means, a nation under siege. If we run into martial law, we're prisoners to something. We're prisoners to the military. There is no three branches of government. There is no constitution. There is no law and true law and order. There's the end of a barrel of a gun. That's what you're up against. We need to make this peaceful. We need to get these committees of safety. We need to get our towns and our cities signed up on this to understand, yes, the only thing that the most important, they do everything the way they want to do it. However their plans are, that's fine, as long as the chain of command rests with the local government, and in charge of that, ultimately, as far as the law is concerned, is the sheriff. We need to keep and maintain peace in our streets, on our highways, on our byways. We need to assist the people fleeing cities and helping them to survive. They're looking for water and food, just like anyone else would be doing. They're looking to survive with their families. Let's not make them criminals. Let's bring them in and let's help them. They can roll up their sleeves and work with us. We'll find a place for them, because that's what people do, and that's what people should be doing. So, committees of safety, people. I'm going to harp on this. I'm operating in a sense with a sense of an emergency, a sense of emergency. What other word can I find? We need to do something. Everybody needs to understand and get to that sense of realization that we are in an emergency situation at this very moment. Get your head out of the sand, like the proverbial ostrich. Let's do something, because it's coming, and it's going to take you down, and it's going to be very painful and very uncomfortable, and America may be lost forever unless we, the people, step up and do something, and we need to do it now. We need to get papers out. We need to let the governors know what they need to be doing. We'll figure it out for them. We'll tell them what they need to be doing, and we'll get the information into the Congress and into the Senate, and those who will come out of the Washington and go home to their governor and work with their governor to do what has to be done. Let's get it done. There is a peaceful way, and I am sure even on the international level, if the governors come together in solidarity and try to work out something with the other nations, I am sure something would be worked out and received. And September 30th, on whatever's happening on that international level, could be a lot less than what it's going to be if we don't work something out. Governors know, they should know, we're going to remind them, nothing but gold or silver for legal tender. That's what the Constitution says. That's what every state needs to be moving towards. How? I don't know. We can give them some ideas, but there's economists to figure that out. There's people, this is what they're in office for. Figure it out. Talk with people in other nations. What are they doing? Let us do it too. People need to be buying gold and silver. If you're saving in anything else but gold and silver, Russian roulette, the bullet is going to come up soon. There's only 6 chambers in a gun, in most guns anyway, that have the barrels, and you spin that barrel, okay? You got 6 shots, and you will pull that trigger 6 times. It's going to go off. You're playing Russian roulette with your life. Because when it all collapses, any investment you have or everything out is just going to collapse. The only thing worth anything is gold and silver. That food, okay? Gold, silver, food. The essentials. Water, even. Water. Even water. It's going to be tough. You know, even the waterways will be polluted with people traveling, leaving the cities, and they'll be bathing in whatever streams are out there, polluting your waters. I mean, look at Let's get some common sense here. It's time to wake up. Everybody needs to get moving on this thing. We cannot play no longer. We got to get it done. Okay, let's move on to the next thing here. Ham radios. We've been working on ham radios. We're working on an arrangement. I've got a sketchy situation. If everybody goes out to National Liberty Alliance right now and click on the NLA store, we've been working on the website getting this NLA store together, which is the different products that we got out there. Hopefully, will help us earn some money. But everything we have, most everything we have out there, are sensible items, things that people need. Okay, a phone system, seed for food, the silver lung, NL Ready, food independence. We have now. I have some information out there on a handheld multi-use radio that we're setting up. We're still working some things out on that. And then we have other things, of course. You know, people have asked for back for the business cards. We have the business cards all set up again. We're offering two cards. And again, every time you buy anything here, it helps the National Liberty Alliance continue on. We earn money from this. Someone's coming through. No. Is that you, Gerard? Gerard, you're coming through.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mute yourself. And other things, you know, we also are putting some T-shirts and some caps and some cups and a few other things like that. That helps get the word out. So those are important things, too. But what I want to talk a little bit about is the radio. We're working on this radio, and if you click on the radio, you'll go to a page where there's a couple of videos, give you some information on this radio we're putting together. And we got to be careful. You know, we're going to be selling a radio. You'll be able to buy these kind of radios for about, oh, goodness, if you go really searching it out on the Internet, you can find them for maybe $27, $30. But a lot of them are knockoffs or they're inferior, and we want to give you a good radio that's going to last. We want to make sure we've got a battery in there. We're working all kinds of different things. Hopefully we can set a system up where we get the long-term battery, you know, it's got the extra power, lasts longer, that kind of thing, or at least offer that battery with it if we can't buy it with the unit. But we want to be sensible about this. We want to give a radio that's going to work. And we'll be selling the radios as is for a certain price. But for an additional $25, for an additional $25, we will program the radio for you. Most people are not technological to be able to program the radio. Some people who are sort of technical, even for them, it may be difficult. And on a higher level of that, yeah, they could probably figure it out. And then, of course, the experts, the guys who are really technical, yeah, they could do it themselves. Okay, but generally speaking, I'd say 90% of the people, maybe more, are incapable of really setting the radio system up. And they're going to need someone doing it for them. And that takes some time, so we're charging $25, which we're going to offer the people if they want us to set the radios up. And what does that mean? We will set up radio frequencies 1 through 5. 1 through 5 are radio stations that will, you know, frequencies that we'll set up that anyone can talk on. You do not need a ham radio license to talk on those radio stations on those five channels. Everybody that gets a radio through us and is working through the system as time goes on, National Liberty Alliance people particularly, of course, and anybody else taps into this, they'll have the same five frequencies set up. Those five frequencies are the frequencies that you would be using for local situations. And even if you would travel from one county to another, you'll pick up other people, friendly people within that's part of our movement, and people who have tapped into what we're doing to help each other as we move in different areas, especially during hard times. But ideal to be able, if you got to go out and pick things up or do things or get water or do something, you know, you need to be able to communicate with home. You need a radio. These things will do it for you. So the five first stations will be that, five first frequencies. Channel number 6 will be set up for weather. Okay, that's a constant thing for weather to be sent out. It's called NOAA, I believe. So you'll get your local weather through the NOAA channel. So that's channel number 6. Channel number 7 will be set up for National Liberty Alliance ourselves, with all we the people through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, but NLA members totally. That channel will be set up, and we will come on at certain times to talk, to relay vital information, and to get information from people all across the nation. Every committee safety has committee of correspondence chair. That person needs to get a few people working with them, and this is part of what they need to be doing, is preparing the emergency services. They need to be notifying, getting a hold of all the ham operators within their county, one, two, three, or more, whatever they can get, at least one, and get them signed on to NLA. You know, they'll jump at the opportunity. Any ham radio operator that's in operation today, if National Liberty Alliance approaches them on a local level and they see what we're doing, they will be right on board with us. They're already in the game, and they will connect. They'll love to be able to connect county to county across America, 3,000-plus counties, and to be able to come on and really get information out on what's going on. You know, first order of business the enemy does is cuts off information, cuts off supplies, and demoralizes the enemy. That's what they do. Well, we want to protect ourselves, prevent ourselves from being demoralized by working with our sheriff. We want to keep communications going, and we want to, and we've got communications going, and working with our sheriffs will keep supplies moving, and we will survive. If we don't have those three things going, we will not survive. No one has done this yet. We are doing it. It's your job to do it. So we have to do it. So we need to connect. Every county needs to get ham operators locally on board with us. And at a certain time every day, we will be focusing in on talking about what's going on across the nation, giving vital information and potentially even information if courts are still opening and anything going on or whatever we could be doing there, we'll be communicating that business too. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like when we get to that side of things, but let me tell you, we need to be preparing. And if you're not preparing, you're only fooling yourself. And if you don't do anything and we fail, it's because you did nothing. Gerard?
I was going to say, I wanted to bring up the fact that this country, when it runs the way it's supposed to, the way our forefathers designed it to, is automatically prospers at an exponential rate. That's what happened in the beginning, and that's what will happen again. If we get back to constitutional government, and if the rest of the world doesn't do it, if we just did it ourselves between us, between the states, we would grow so powerful so fast. They could all do their corporate thing out there, but if we ran our corporations the way they're supposed to run, and business between people, which, of course, when you run it like that, you can't have a small group of people controlling things. You see, prosperity works best when it runs through the people, through free enterprise, and that's what the Constitution provides for. Everybody's free to go out there and do what they can do and become successful at it. And you see, this whole control thing, when they get outside of the Constitution, where they license you and they do this and they do that, it's about control. And when you have control, you don't have prosperity. So what the Constitution does is give those controls back to the people. You see, your ham radios, you know, there's going to be people out there, subversives, that are, oh, you're talking outside. Oh, you guys are, you know, what are you doing, drug dealing or making deals or terrorists or whatever? No. Any public official that doesn't think that the public has a right to be able to communicate with each other, and on it, that's the whole thing ham radio was set up for. It's just it's a people's band. It's like a citizen's band. It's a completely not run, you know, by any government agency. It's by the people doing stuff for the people. I mean, it's not commercial either. Commercial is not allowed on it. You're not allowed to rebroadcast anything on it. That's, you know, you got to be careful when you're on your ham radio. If you got a radio playing in the background and you're rebroadcasting something, that's not good. That's one of the no-nos. So anyway, but people will go over that. You know, when you get on the ham radio, Elmers teach people. And it's a community. It's the most family-oriented thing you've ever seen. And it goes with the whole plan. It goes with the Constitution. It goes with liberty. It goes with freedom. And it goes with justice. And, you know, look at, people will give up their liberty if they have to. But nobody, you know, they'll put up with losing some freedom for a time if they have to sacrifice and see a goal. But what people can't stand is an injustice. And an injustice is a breaking of one of the fundamental principles. It's a breaking of a law of God. And you're not allowed to let injustices go. And people don't let them go. So it's not just about freedom, it's about justice. And when you see something that's not just, and then you don't act on it, and your conscience doesn't bother you, it's common law, it's common sense, you know, it's a fundamental principle, and it's something that we should know fundamentally in us. You don't need a lawyer to explain these things, because you learn where the words come from, and then you live them. Anyway, I don't want to get off on a big thing. I just wanted to add to that. Thank you.
All right, back to the radios, though, themselves, as far as breaking them up. Okay, we covered the first five. The first five channels, channel 1, channel 2, channel 3, channel 4, channel 5. Every one of our radios that we sell, that we program, will be programmed with those first five channels. They're called MURS, M-U-R-S, which stands for Multiple Use Radio System. Those five channels are the channels you'll be talking on as you're moving around locally for local emergencies, communicating with people, communicating with home as you're away, you know, running around the neighborhood or whatever the case may be. And you'll find a lot of other people that'll be on those channels as you're moving about, because they'll be us and others that have found us. Okay,
well,
so
John,
that's very important.
Those channels don't require a license to talk on.
Right.
That's an important
They don't require
point.
A license, yeah.
Don't
People
require
can just talk.
Now,
well, we want
right.
to be very careful and polite and make sure we don't step on people. And we'll develop a process like they did on, you know, what do they call them, radios that they use out in the truckers. What do they call that?
The CBs?
The CB
CBs?
Radios.
Yeah, well.
CB radios.
Yeah.
All right, anyway, those are the first five channels that we will program. Everybody's radio will have those five programs into the game. The next one will be automatic. Channel 6 will be, of course, the NOAA, which will give you the weather, storm situations, information of that nature. Then after that is the NLA station, which will be the whatever you know frequency we'll be transmitting on at a certain time, which will probably be something like 6 o'clock Eastern time or 9 o'clock. I don't know what we're going to work out yet, but sometime we will be broadcasting on a daily basis, not broadcasting, transmitting on a daily basis, communicating with other counties across the nation, reporting and seeing what we can figure out, what information is important for people to have on a national level. Then after that, from a channel 8 upward, for anywhere from 5 or 6 to 30 or 40 channels, will be programmed on the emergency services where you live in your county, in your neighborhood. You know, you get the rural counties. We were looking at this earlier today, talking with Jan, and he was looking up his area. And certain rural areas, you know, they maybe find about 7 different frequencies that are being used for emergency services in his entire area. Whereas in my area, there was like 35 or so, maybe even 40. There was quite a few. But, you know, there's rescue, police, fire, and different things of that nature. There's disasters, a disaster station for your area. Most areas have that, not all. There's the sheriff's communication systems that are set up. And then there are also informational things that are important that are available in some areas and not necessarily in others. So all of this, it could be figured out. We work it off of your, I believe this is zip code, which we would find your county and then click onto that. You know, again, this is the technical side of things that a technician would be working on to program these radios as they go out. So that we'll all be on the same channel, so to speak. And then your scanner system, when you push the scanner button on to scan, it'll be set up to scan through channels 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It'll skip 6 because that's the weather. It's a constant report. You can go to that anytime you want for the weather. So it'll skip that. It'll pick up 7, which will be NLA, and we may be transmitting off times too, possibly. So in an emergency situation, we would be. So 7 would pick back up, and then 8 to whatever number they have in emergency services, another 5 or 6 or maybe 30 or 35. Okay, and that's the area it'll scan, those areas. And if you want to get in talking, I presume, you know, you shut the scanner off and turn to channel 1 or turn to channel, if it's too busy, you can say, hey, Joe or Frank or Mary, hey, let's get on 3, and it's pretty open right now, and you can go to 3 and talk. Or you could be picking people up and exchanging information, whoever's on there. Okay, but we need communications. Now, I thought I was going to be able to give a price tonight, and I was going to. We did have things figured out, but we're looking now for something a little bit better than what we were looking at, I think, if that exists, and I do think it does, which we may be a little more $10 or so, $20 more than we had originally planned. But the decision is going to be made to go with the better quality. We don't want to get the knockoffs that are coming out of China. We want to get the ones that I think are coming out of Taiwan that are coming out that are good quality and get the guarantee or warranty. Not that that would be worth anything in hard times, but we do want something that's going to work. We want to see if we can't get a longer life battery. We're going to suggest, you look at everything that I have that I depend on a battery with, you know, that chargeables, my tools and different things that I have, I always have two. And even my laptop, I got two batteries for my laptop. Okay, always have that spare. And I have, you know, and when you're charging one, you can be using the other. But in any event, we want to get a good battery, and then we want to get a good spare battery. So we're going to offer that too. I think we're looking at the very long-term batteries. I think they were going for $15. So we'll probably offer that as an accessory, as a backup. If we can buy the radio with that long-term battery in it, then you buy another one, that'd be ideal. But in any event, you know, we're going to look for the best. We're also looking for different antenna systems that you would be hooking up onto it. There are certain antenna systems you can hook up onto your car. That'll give you a much longer range as you're traveling, and your radio will plug right into it. A different one that you'll be hooking on your home when you get home, and then another one that's a regular with the best we can get that when you're just walking around with it. So it'll probably be three different antennas. I don't know whether we'll be able to package that together, or I think we'll probably offer that as accessories. But we're looking for the best that we can offer. And we want to get it inexpensive on the one end, you know, something that's affordable. But on the other end, we don't want cheap. So look at, yeah, can you go and buy the radio? The radio that we're looking to sell, you can go out and get for $27 to $30. But they're knockoffs, and there are other problematic situations there. Okay, so if that's what you want, then you're not going to have, of course, the programming that we're going to have. And we're going to strongly suggest everybody go for the programming. If you can program yourself, fine, and we'll try to, you know, you'll have to figure out your emergency system, local setup things for yourself and which ones need to be put in. You'll have to make sure that channels 1 through 5, and we'll put whatever information, however that technically works, up on our website so you can find that information. Make sure 1 through 5 is hooked up the same way we have it. And you put nowhere on 6 and then NLA. Make sure you get NLA in there on channel 7 and so on. So we'll kind of put that up. But remember, when the Internet goes down, that won't be up there. So people need to get this done now. And they need to get these radios. As soon as we start selling them, you need to get them. And this will also help with revenue. We need revenue right now. We've got a lot of paperwork we really need to get out. We don't have the money. We just don't have the money. So if you got some extra money laying around, send it to us. It's not going to be worth anything soon anyway, so why not, huh? But anyway.
Send John your worthless money, will you? I never heard such an appeal all my day.
I couldn't help myself. What was that guy when we were kids? He was on TV telling the kids to go into their parents' wallets and take out. And they did it. I can't think of the guy's name. They did it. They took him off the air for a while.
Something like that.
Huh?
I said, was
you
that
remember
Soupy
his name?
Sales? One of them
Soupy
guys?
Sales. That was him. Yes, yes.
He got a lot.
Right, anyway,
of
yeah. Go in and take all your worthless money. Send it
look,
to us.
I want
to
add something before I lose my train of thought. Each committee of safety should be doing this. They should be getting into ham radio. They should be establishing
exactly.
Own frequency.
That is the job.
Every community will need different frequencies for different things, but yet every community will be able to stay in touch with each other. You know what I'm saying? Like certain channels.
That'll be the job of the chairman for the committee of correspondents.
That's
and
right.
You're absolutely
those,
right. The stations above
should be doing that.
There are 130.
You know, and don't let them tell you that because you have communications, and you're assembling that you're some kind of a terrorist group. That's what we the people do. We communicate and we assemble. And the day that we can't communicate and the day that we can't assemble is the day that we're in chains. You see, these things all are about liberty and freedom. Anyway, go ahead, John, before I get on my soapbox.
There are you can open the soapbox after me. There are 128 channels on this radio. And so if we program 28, just to make it a little easy, let's say we get programmed 28. We've got 5, we've got NOAA, then you got NLA, and then whatever else emergency services you have in your area, they're all in. Now you got other stations above it. There's nothing programmed in there, okay? Well, that's where your local system comes in, and you want to be talking with whoever is involved with the Committee of Correspondence in the Committee of Safety, who needs to be talking with the ham radio people, who should be getting together and giving people, talking to people about this, educating people. Everybody needs to, should go out and get yourself a ham operating license, okay? And not that you really need it in an emergency, you don't, but we all should understand how this thing works. All of these programs coming in will be programmed off. In other words, channels 1 through 5, you'll be able to push the button and talk, okay? Channel 6, it's just a receiving. You're not going to talk. It's nowhere. It's just receiving weather and emergency situations weather-wise coming through your way, which we'll need, okay? Need to know if there's a big storm coming through or something. The other channels above that will be the transmission button will be set on off. Okay, you won't be able to push button to transmit. You need a license to transmit. And in an emergency, of course, you know, you could turn the switch on so you can transmit in an emergency if you needed to on a particular particular station. But generally speaking, I can't think of why you'd be there when you'd want to be on the emergency stations. The last thing you want to do is be poking and pushing that button in and cutting out emergency vehicles and people working at a disaster or something and blocking that communications out by pushing that button. You're liable for that, especially if someone dies on that kind of a situation. So we really need to understand what we're doing and understand the system. But at worst, even if you don't understand it, at least the first 5 stations, those ones we can talk on, and hopefully we're not going to be rude to each other. We're going to talk and give each other space to be able to come back and forth and communicate. You know, we'll learn little things, tricks that, you know, you give a transmission. And I know when I was working emergency services in New York City, at the end of a transmission, we'd say K. And that meant end of transmission. And then someone else could pick up and talk. And when they finished, they ended up with K. And they ended their transmission. And so something like that, of course, would be established. Gerard, we get all kinds of stuff coming in on you. I mean, really loud.
Yeah, that's right, because I'm trying to interrupt you here for a minute.
Okay.
Nobody will – you cannot transmit on an emergency channel. You will be immediately arrested, and radios aren't opened up to that. People that know how to operate
–
they'll be locked because that's the way they're supposed to be, and that's part of the licensing is knowing those things. Look, everybody hates licensing and that, but something like ham radio, if you don't license it, it would be chaos and it would be dangerous. Because when you transmit with ham radio, you make like a radiation out of the antenna, and you have to know all those frequencies and what you're doing and how close you are to things. So people aren't going to do that if they don't have a license, because licensing is a schooling. And when you take your ham radio license, you're going to be learning about all these things about not transmitting on this channel, and you know what's the safest thing with an antenna and the distances you have to be for the frequencies that you're talking on. And it's very interesting, and it's not that hard, but it's important. If we didn't have these things, we wouldn't be able to. It would be chaos in a day. You know what I mean? So because you have these things, you can do this orderly. And it's very nice. I mean, you have a lot of family people out on ham radio. And when you get talking on the radio, people teach each other things. So you're going to find out who those frequencies are. Just using this thing is a learning experience. So that's the whole thing. If you get your license and you get on it and you use it, you'll start meeting different factions of your community that you didn't even know were out there. Okay? Anyway, go ahead, John. I didn't want to get you off your train of thought there.
All right. So anyway, you know, look, you're working with the Committee of Safety. Committee of Safety has the Committee of Correspondence, the chair for that. That person is responsible for communications in many different ways. Ham is one part of that. Local communications, get working together with ham radio operators, getting classes going together, getting people in the community involved. Certainly every one of us should be involved in that, get some knowledge in the air. But even during the emergency, coming together and getting information and learning and working together in those areas. You know, during the day in this kind of an emergency that we're talking about, when a total collapse, I can envision the fact going down in, and again, only if you have a committee of safety in your county will you be able to work out the plan where you go down to the town hall at the end of the day to hear what's going on, or at least on a weekly basis to get the latest news and what's happening, what the county's doing, what the towns are doing, how they're working, communicating, food movements, water movements, so on and so forth, and where help is needed. Okay, we need volunteers working over here. We need somebody over here. Hey, look, if you don't work, you don't eat, okay? You need to be working with your community. In emergency, you won't be going to work. You'll be coming into the town to find out from the whoever is in charge of the handing out work, the things that need to be done. Hey, go down to this factory over here. They're pushing out this, and we need to get this food out here, or we got to deliver this, whatever it is. I don't know. That's what we're going to have to be working out during that time period. And only that, look at, if we don't work this out, no one's going to be doing this, because they're going to have us sitting on our hands, waiting, starving, going to the corner to get on the bus to go to the FEMA camps because they don't want you to do anything. And they've been making ghost towns out of the entire country here. Okay? Is that what you want? No, I'm staying home. I'm going to roll up my sleeves, and I'm going to rebuild in my neighborhood with my neighbors and my friends. And I'm going to do what has to be done, not only on a local level, but whatever we could do on a national level by continue our communications. And whatever work we can be doing, wherever we can be doing it on a judicial level, if it's possibly working anyways. But clearly the courts need to be going in the county levels. Okay, we're still going to have situations where there'll have to be trials and things have to be figured out. Therein would be really the grand jury working together to really kind of prevent a lot of stuff from having to go into the courts and fixing problems and keeping that constitution alive, working with the sheriffs. So look it, we need to be thinking about these things. We need to be doing these things. We need to be sporting these things. And again, you know, anything you buy through National Liberty Alliance goes to continue National Liberty Alliance. It helps to pay the bills, to keep the lights on, so to speak, and keep the transmission going. And any monies you can give, $5 a month or more, and maybe occasionally just an extra few dollars here or there, because we need it. We need to get going with the governors. We need to get going with Congress and so on. Okay, I don't want to repeat myself.
Hey, John.
But that's where we're at with that, yeah.
Is part of your – let me ask you something. Is part of your vision that the ham radio will replace the BlackBerry?
Ooh,
the video game?
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. you think people would be walking around the streets with their ham radio talking and falling in manhole covers like they do now playing their game?
Well, you know, if they are still playing on the little games and stuff, then they won't be eating because they'll be busy playing and not working, huh? So,
yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that'll go down anyway, so we won't have that stuff. All right. Time is short. That's my message for tonight. We better be doing something. It's going to be my message from now until September 30th and beyond. Let us pray that September 30th comes, and it's a very soft movement into whatever transition is going to take place. And, you know, who knows? It could be a month or two or three or more where really we don't notice too much difference. I don't know. You don't know. Let's hope that that is the case, to give us more time to prepare for the chaos that is coming. It is coming. We can prevent that chaos from coming by doing something now and organizing and preparing and working through the committees of safety, through our local governments, and making sure that we have a chain of command working through the process, okay? And it's something, and we're compassionate to the people that travel through our highways and byways and through our towns and villages and need a place to sleep for a while or food or whatever, and we make sure we house them and take care of them and let them continue on their way, or send them to a place where they can stay until they can return wherever home is. So let's do what has to be done. Time is short. Okay, do we have any questions
out
there?
I also want to say that people should realize that we are fighting landmark cases, and that's going to be our job, too. We have landmark cases that are going right now, and some of us personally have landmark cases. And these are fundamental principles about property and liberty. And these are the cases that National Liberty Alliance is taking on, head on, in the courts. And any other thing we run across in the course of doing our liberty, you know, that they want to tell us that we can't do. You know what I mean? They start telling us you can't do this and you can't do that. They better show us, you know, we'll hold their feet to the fire. That's what National Liberty Alliance does. Thank you.
Okay. Jan, are there any questions out there that you know of, or anybody? Have you seen any? Yeah? What kind of questions do we have?
We have four questions and a comment. The first question, since the U.S. District Courts are the only Article III courts in America, can a sheriff summon a common law grand jury in the county he is working in?
For a federal case or for a state case?
Doesn't say.
Okay, well, look at that's exactly the part. That's the way it used to be. Look, let's look at the history. The first grand jury, who called the first grand jury? We, the people, called together the first grand jury, the first known grand jury anyway, Magna Carta. We, the 25, we're going to fix the problem. And if you have a problem, you get a hold of us. We'll send the four, and the four can't fix it. The 25 will take care of it. That's the grand jury. We the people. We don't need no one to call us. We can call ourselves. Any 25 people can come together and do the right thing. Okay? And thankfully, they need a little knowledge to do that, so they need to really dig it down into the books, so to speak, and learn history and figure out how things work and get some knowledge to understand and get the principles necessary, because these are the principles of God we're talking about, and you better tread softly there. If you think you're going to bring your own principles in and you think you're going to get away with it, the day will come and you'll answer for that, because you're talking, this is God's grounds now. This is the holy grounds, ultimately they are. A court of justice is holy ground, because you come, a court of justice is called, justice is synonymous with virtue. Go look it up, Black's Law. Look it up, Bouvier's. Same thing over and over.
Hey,
it is synonymous with virtue.
I want to just expand on something. Look, at any 25 people that want to call a grand jury should summon their sheriff. In other words, you wouldn't have just 25 people all over the place calling grand juries. It has to be done under the law, under the Constitution.
Right, well, again, that's why...
And it would be a legal process. Right, so 25 people get together and they do an investigation, and four of them go out, or whatever they find, whatever they do, at some point, you get the sheriff, because now you're ready, and you can give the case that, and then you get grand juries picked. But go ahead.
Yeah, the general public, generally speaking, don't know how to do this. They don't know what to do. That's a good thing, and it's a bad thing. It's a good thing because there's a lot of out of control people who have their own agenda. If they would call it and people would respond to it, they'll call it more chaos than good. So from that point of view, it's a good thing that there's got to be a little bit of an education of figuring and an understanding on how to do this, and also the fact that it's got to have some realization that it's got authority. It's a bad thing from the other end, because we're sitting here and we're not getting it done. But we're doing it here at National Liberty Alliance. We're teaching. We're going to do it the right way. And that's why we're going to establish administrations in every single county in America. And so that's what we're doing. And we need to do that quickly, too. I can tell you that when we hit critical mass, everything will connect very quickly. Look, we just have to get the framework structure moving and get it going, but critical mass is coming. When critical mass hits us, we're going to have people coming in and saying, what can we do? Where do we go? We have to have those places to take that vacuum and bring it in, okay? We have to be prepared for that. And we will then, almost overnight, fill administrations in every county in America. Overnight, fill 100, 200 people in a county on committees of safety quickly when critical mass is met. It's coming. I don't have control over that, and all I can see that it's moving slowly, but all of a sudden one day it's going to snap and it's going to happen, and the waters are just going to flow. The flood water is going to come. We have to be able to control it. So let's get constructed here. Let's get the structure up. Let's get doing what we have to do. But anyway, it's all about virtue, okay? Because justice is virtue, and virtue belongs to God. It's the hems of Christ. It's the hem of Christ. It's Christ that brings forth the virtue, okay? Virtue emanates out from him. If anybody remembers the story of the woman with the issue of blood for 12 years, okay, and the damsel. He was on his way to cure a damsel, 12 years old. Very interesting story there. Well, I won't get into that now. But in any event, you know, all she did was touch the hem of his garment, and virtue came out of him. And he turned and said, "Who touched me?" He knew who touched him. "Who touched me? I felt virtue come out." And his disciples said, "What are you talking about? There's all people all around you. There's a lot of people touching you. It's a mob here, you know." But he felt virtue come out. Okay, so virtue comes out, emanates from God. And that's what we're talking about in the court. Courts of virtue, courts of God. And those are holy grounds. And we're looking to bring the governor of the universe back into the courts. And that, I think, is a holy thing. I think that's a good thing to do. That's a just thing to do. And I think it's a godly thing to do. And I do believe God wants that at this time in the world. I really do think that, that is part of the plan, is to bring justice back into our courts and judgment to take place in nations. And however things work from there, I don't know. But anyway, we have to do the right thing. And right now for us, the right thing is bringing justice back into the courts of justice and making sure mercy and justice prevails. That's our job. That's what we need to do. Okay, so look, we need to prepare things on a local level. We need to get that together. We need to get communications going. We need to get committees of safeties up and running. We need to be communicating with our sheriffs. We need to be getting preparing things. We need to get on board. Everybody needs to be reaching out to the Oath Keepers in their neighborhood, getting them involved. Look, there is a leadership in the Oath Keepers. And they've kind of ignored us. And the main reason I think they've been ignoring us is because the main leadership is a lawyer, okay? And what we're doing is a little kooky from his perspective, because he's got this perspective of a lawyer. We're talking about a bar lawyer, okay? And so there's a little bit of a disconnect there. If we can get beyond that, if the rest of his leadership works and say, wait a second, you know, most of them are regular people. If they look to see what we're doing, they can connect. And I'm not telling them to stop preparing for war. We need to be preparing for war. We'd be dumb not to prepare for war. But we need to be preparing for peace, too. And that's part of, they are not doing that. That's the message we need to get to them. They need to start to prepare for peace. I think a lot of these people are at the stage and at the point of view saying it's a lost cause to think that we're going to save our nation peacefully. It's going to be a bloody bath. And they're just waiting for it, and they're preparing for it. And again, nothing wrong with preparing for it. But they're wrong from their perspective or their perception that there is nothing else they could be doing. There is something, and we have it right here at National Liberty Alliance. We need to get the message out to these Oath Keepers. We need them working with us. Gerard, we need to get up to the Oath Keepers up north in our neighborhood. We need to do it in the next week. We really have to do that. And really, you know, blast some things into their ears to make them listen. Okay. Questions.
Ready for number two?
Yeah. Well, okay. Did I answer number one?
Yes, it was in there in the beginning.
Okay.
I am assuming that a lot of you people this week read the article put out by the Southern Poverty Law Center, posted in Alternet, regarding the constitutional sheriffs. It was pure propaganda. The question is, what can we do to stop the propaganda machine? Now, I liked our sheriff's director, committee director's response to that, Robert Overhill. He says he was going to write them an email and thank them very kindly for pointing out all of the good sheriffs in the country. It saves him having to get a list of his own. So what do you think, John?
Yeah, what is it that we can do? Again, we get the support. Look, when you do good things, there's always someone out there saying all manner of evil against you. It's just the nature of doing good, and evil doesn't like it, and that's going to happen. You know, it's pretty much Here at National Liberty Alliance, from my perspective and the perspective of most of the leadership here, is that when people say terrible and evil things, to ignore it, okay? And just keep broadcasting the truth, okay? Transmitting or broadcasting the truth. And you know what? Eventually it'll be seen. You know, there's some things that really kind of hindered us for a while because people said and did evil things and about where we're coming from and what we're doing and so on and so forth. And some good people, you know, ignored us and ran away from us, so to speak, because they thought that, you know, they believed this stuff, okay? But when they came full circle and they couldn't find any place to rest, they couldn't find a solution, they started to reconsider and they found we are the solution, that we are honest. We do have come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. It's not just words we use. What kind of a hypocrite would we be by bringing up those words all the time, honor, justice, and mercy? But I do from time to time hear from people who have no sense of honor and no sense of justice in them, and yet they do use those words. Okay, but just listen closely and you'll figure people out, okay, because, you know, words have a way of finding themselves, so to speak. You know, people will have those Freudian slips, they'll be inconsistent, and that'll kind of warn you there's something wrong there. I think National Liberty Alliance has been very, very consistent in the truth, so, we have a harmony, and once in a while we get it wrong and we fix it, and we don't hide the fix, we fix it. But the thing is, with whatever's going out there with the sheriffs, we need to just continue to get the truth. We have a great paper put together, get that into the hands of the sheriffs, and any kind of news that they've gotten on us or any other groups of us, how terrible and horrible we are, if they read that stuff, they'll be scratching their head and saying, what are these people talking about? Look what they're putting out here. We're empowering the sheriff. We're getting behind the sheriff. We're giving them, you know, power, authority, and information in the Constitution, and talking about the, you know, the chain of command, and that they're the top of that chain of command in a national or even just a local emergency. You know, the sheriff can pull into any situation, any place in the county where an emergency situation is taking place, and it doesn't matter who's operating there. The sheriff has the authority to pull in and take total control of the whole operation. It doesn't matter whether it's a fire or an ambulance situation, a rescue situation, the state police, FBI, it doesn't matter anything. He's got the authority to take full control of that emergency situation. Now, in most cases, it wouldn't be very wise for him to try to take control of a fire situation. He's going to be working with the chief. It wouldn't be very wise to be taking control of maybe some paramedics or EMTs that are doing some work. I mean, he's going to be working with them, you know, obviously. You know, a sheriff should know, hopefully have some wisdom or logic to understand that. But anyway, did I answer the question?
Yep, you got that one. Next one. And this is kind of for all the members of NLA. Does anyone at NLA want to create a constitutional sheriff board game? We noticed at Panera Bread that there is a group that gathers weekly to play board games. Maybe somebody would be interested in creating a sheriff board game, maybe like Monopoly, but with go to jail and do not pass go, you know, every other space or something like that.
Yeah, if someone had the time to do something like that and they wanted to do it, but I wouldn't want them to put all their time into that and not put their time into the committees of safety and other things. We've got to be putting right. things into perspective. I certainly don't have that kind of time. So, but anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Yep. Next question, and says, since we the people have unalienable rights, and now the question I do not understand, I think there's a word or two missing, and I couldn't figure out what it was. It says, to whom government has civil rights?
Okay, well, civil rights is something given to you from the government. I think maybe when Brent comes on, I see Brent is here tonight, so maybe he could talk a little bit more about that than I could. So let us pass that. We'll push that to Brent.
Okay.
About the civil rights side of things.
The next part of that is, to whom do civil rights apply? And I guess
they'll pull that. Well, again, you know, they've created a game here. You know, it's a whole. What they try to do, what evil always does, it take things that good people or goodness constructs. They try to take it over and move evil into play, and they'll change things around. They'll make the structure look the same. Everything looks fine, but meanwhile, it's turning really ugly inside. And so this whole fictional situation, you know, these de facto government or governments, plural, the de facto courts, all of these fictional things going on. They'll have civil rights, and they try to play word games, and then people get lost in the word games, and they think that they have to walk into a place like a courtroom and, you know, say some magic words and click their heels and everything's going to go well. Nothing could be further from the truth. They'll be sitting back there laughing at you because you'll make yourself look crazy, and they just roll right over you and move on. So they want you to really play those silly games. We don't talk about civil rights because we don't have civil rights. We have unalienable rights. We don't have constitutional rights. We have unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. As long as that Constitution is still in full force, it serves as a protection. Unfortunately, in most of our courts, the Constitution doesn't have the power and the authority. We're trying to bring it back into the courts, to bring that power and authority, put the fear of the people into the hearts of these judges that are making these decisions. They think that they're above the law. They think that they can do whatever they want and get away with it. And to some degree, they have been doing it. But that has come to an end, and that's what we are here at National Liberty Alliance is all about. That's what the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is all about. We are going to deal with all these people. And if they don't turn from their evil ways before the whatever time comes up, and grab onto that olive branch that we keep putting out there. Once we get that out of the side, there'll be no forgiveness at that point. There's going to be justice. I mean, mercy will always be considered in every case. We'll teach every jury that sits anywhere, at the end of the day, consider mercy. Can it be given? And that's your decision. But justice must be met in the courts, and justice will meet these people if they do not turn from their ways before we get to that other side. So whenever that happens, it happens.
Okay, the last thing I have is an opinion that was submitted, and it says, I think we also need a short version of the Committee of Safety presentation for new prospects to get their interest, and then the longer version that we've just finished for the how to go about organizing a Committee of Safety.
Well, we don't have the time to really put out there to get some short versions. You could do, look at the first part of the Committee of Safety. We do have, by the way, everybody, we do have a new Committee of Safety presentation up there, and it's an hour and 10 minutes long, but it's the original 30-minute layout that we had in the beginning, okay? So it then comes to a second part, which is approximately 15 to 20 minutes long, which deals with how the people can create the charter, okay? Works on the charter. And then the next 15 to 20 minutes deals with the resolutions, okay? The point is by the time you get from one end, which introduces the Committee of Safety, gives the history and all the information necessary to get people interested in it, then it moves to the nuts and bolts of how we're going to do it and how we're going to create the charter and everything else. By the time you get to the end, look at, and we're going to talk about this on Thursday in great detail. You got 20 people in a room coming and listen. You got 10 of them from one county and 3 from another county and maybe even just 1 from another county and or whatever. You know, you could have a mixed house there. Well, you just covered everything for them to take. They can walk away because I make copies when I do it. I make copies of the charter with no county or state name on it and no signatures, obviously, on the end of it. Make copies of that. And I make copies of the resolution, same way, sort of blank areas in those areas. And then you hand the copies of that with a copy of the handbook, okay, where they can also go up and get more information and more copies up online. But they now can literally, if there are 5 people in that room from one county, and they all agree that they're going to take different positions, and you got the 5 positions filled, right then and there they can sign the paper, they go purchase the seal, put the seal on it, they have now done their resolution. And then they've done their charter first, and then their resolution. Now they're seeking the sheriff to get him on board, to get his guidance, to get his input, but to get him to follow and to come forward also with the people to agree on this resolution of a chain of command during an emergency and getting his signature on it. And now you've got everything going in that county to go from county to from town to town and to this, whatever cities, if there are cities in your county, and get them on board. And then once you get them on board, it's a matter you can go to the next step of business, which that we'll figure out as we get there. But let's get everybody on board with the chain of command, the agreement that we, the people, need to be staying home, taking care of our own selves. That's the American way. We're not going to sit down and wait on the corner for a bus to come to take us to the FEMA camps. We're not going to be sitting in FEMA camps waiting for the government to say that the UN has come in and fixed your town for you and the economy's all fixed, now you can all go home. That's insane. Anybody really believe that story? Because I got a bridge in Brooklyn, if you do, up for sale. So, but look it, we the people got to do it. Only we the people can do
it. So what's the Southern Poverty Law Center have against the sheriff being the plug-in for the people? Do they think he's not the right guy? And I mean, who do they say that the people plug into when they have a problem with government or a problem with anything for that matter? You know, look, the committee man was the lowest elected official. They've got rid of him. They've made him appointed. You know, that was the lowest level of government that the people plugged into to send the candidates up. And that's how this whole thing got started for us. So if the sheriff's not the plug-in guy, who is the constitutional elected law enforcement, so he's the plug-in between your police force, your military, and that whole thing of control, the sheriff is the plug-in to them from the people. From the people. You see, that's the difference. That's what the Southern Poverty Law doesn't like about this, that the people are plugging into the system. What do they want? Who do they want to control the people? Who are they giving us to go to? If it's not the constitutional sheriff, who it is? Well, I'll tell you what. There is people, because in a republic form of government, there's a chain of command. I got a little book, John, that I think I gave it to you to publish, that showed all how a republic works. So it's actually documented out, because if there's no sheriff, there's another government official you can go to in the government, up through your legislators and your governors and the lower stages of things that have a certain authority because they come of the people. So there's all different, you know, things that our forefathers gave us to work with, like jury nullification. That was another one, you know. So everything that we fight for, we can argue and win constitutionally. And I want to know, does the Southern Poverty Law Center offer a rebuttal to these things they put out? I mean, if the police force are going to be using this advice to run themselves, and it's just coming from the Southern Poverty Law, I think that the police better listen to what the people say. And how do we play? And if the Southern Poverty Law pretends to be speaking for the people, then they should allow rebuttal. You know what I mean? If they're putting out baloney like that, unconstitutional. Matter of fact, you know, they may be spreading treason, saying that the sheriff shouldn't do this, because, you know, there's fundamental principles here that they're trying, that the enemy is trying to kill.
As a matter of fact, we should look into this. Gerard, we should look into this. Let's get some details on that. Let's investigate this. Maybe they are committing treason. Maybe we need to file a case on it.
I also got breaking news that Ryan Bundy is missing out of prison. They claim to have moved him to get the bullet out of his shoulder, but I don't know that he had a bullet in his shoulder, you know, that he was grazed or whatever. And he just had a bunch of paperwork filed by one of these land-on-the-man judges, this woman that acted as his attorney. You know, where he gets rid of the straw man and all that stuff. So this is what they do. They disappear people for 3 or 4 days. And then they bring them back and they say they're crazy. And they are crazy when they bring them back, because I think they use those drugs. This is a, you know, the military.
Should we get some phone calling out there? What kind of information?
Well, I don't know. They got to let us know what they want to do. But look at Gavin Skine, what's his name? Gavin Skine there. He's already put it out. I didn't watch it. I have to go watch it. Everybody should go watch it. If it looks like it's something like that, the people should holler, because look at these guys are in the middle of a trial. It's a trial that they don't want. It's a trial that we have.
All right, well, let's
we
get the information. Let's get the information to the leadership. Let them look at it, make a decision, and if we need to go forward with it, let's get a hold of the Court Watchers group, and let's get phone calls or whatever is necessary. They figure needs to be done. Create a plan. Get it out.
Well, listen, wherever he is, the family has a right to know where he is, and especially if he's going in for some kind of surgery. I bet you they got him put away for a mental evaluation because that's their MO. They send you away to a hospital. They look on you, and you come back and you behave if you can talk. But anyway,
Jan, you know, have you spoke with Ali lately to find out if our information is on the docket? Because if not, we need to be going forward with paperwork.
Yeah, I just got a note from Ali that Ryan is in his cell, and Kelly went in and verified it.
Okay. So what about the docket? Can you get us a copy of the docket? We want to find out if our paperwork was filed. See if you can get a copy of the docket on the not that case, but on the Montana case.
The Montana case. Okay. Yeah, right. We're working on that today.
All right. Are we ready to move over to Brent?
Yes, sir.
Gerard, are we done? Okay,
yeah.
Brent,
you're
here.
My lips are
Brent
sealed.
Brent Winter, who's going to talk for a while. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that civil rights stuff. But Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Is that correct? I think that's what it is, commonlawyer.com.
Correct. Commonlawyer.com.
Go right ahead, Brent. You got the
Thanks,
mic. We
John.
Missed you last week.
Well, I missed being here, and I was unable. I was in the wilds of Texas killing snakes, dealing with the brush fires. But
okay.
I appreciate your willingness to let me come on. As always, before I get into the militia of the several states and the four militia clauses of our Constitution, I do want to continue with that. You'd mentioned some things. You'd ask if I would comment, and I'll do that up front so I won't forget. As we always say, the only remedy to the lawlessness we see is true law. There is no other remedy. There never has been, and there never will be. And that means three things, that the person must learn true law in its fundamentals. Second, he must safeguard it from additions or subtractions. The old word, keep it, that's what that means. And third, he must do it. He must be committed to all three of those things. Magna Carta says something similar when it lays down the standards for judges that, by the way, informs our Constitution. It puts it in two. It says that judges must, along with sheriffs and bailiffs, by the way, judges must first know the law, and second, they must mean to observe it well. It's not enough just to have a meaning to observe it well if you don't know it. And it's not enough to know it and not have the intention to observe it well. Observe it, that means keep it and enforce it. Well, the same thing is true for us. Now, somebody famous, I forget his name, but he said, and rightly said from observing history, that when a people find themselves in a crisis, they instinctively turn their eyes toward their origins and look there for a sign. Let me repeat that one. It's pretty good, I think. He who never quotes is never quoted. Let me quote it again. When a people find themselves in a crisis, they instinctively turn their eyes toward their origins and look there for a sign. Thus, we have the prophet in the Old Testament after he had sliced the heads off of 800 of the pagan priests of Baal. He had defeated the whole caboodle of bureaucrats that ate at the table of that old whore, Jezebel, who was running the whole country behind her husband. Think about what's happening to us today. Well, he did all that, but then fear struck him, and he ran away. He didn't know where to go. He ran for his life, and he ended up down where God had given the standards for his people the first time down at that place called Sinai, wherever that is, the mountain. And he waited for God, the true lawgiver, to give him a word. And the hurricane came and all the earthquake. And finally he said that, or it says that he heard that still small voice, something echoing in his head that he had learned, no doubt, as a child from the laws of nature's God, as Blackstone tells us and as our Declaration of 76 informs us, which is the Bible. The laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things and the laws of nature of God written in the Bible. And that's what we're after. This point about the federal government, forget it. And I think John said that a while ago. Boy, there never has been a time more when I've never felt the spirit among my own people. And as I get older, I can feel the movement that is afoot. Again, the critical mass of the movement, what people are thinking. They don't much care what Washington does anymore. And I remind listeners, that's what happened in the days of Rome, when Rome didn't just, nobody conquered Rome from the outside. Rome just kind of dried up and blew away and became ashes. And the writers of that day said that what really happened, and it can be described in many ways, but people were in Rome were saying to the emperor himself, as he walked to the Lateran Palace, they'd see him on the street and they'd say, forget it, why don't you just go home? Nobody cares anymore. Nobody cares. Well, that's the way people are feeling about the government, the general government, far away in that place called Washington, D.C. I can feel it. I don't care much. I feel like it's a lost cause. They're worthless, as they say where I come from, worthless as tits on a boar. They don't do anybody any good. They're just there. Well, that's the way people are feeling about our federal government. But the state government, that's quite another animal. I think people are fired up. Because back at the local level, the states and the counties, people can look their state legislature in the eye more readily. And the thing has happened to us that the ratifiers of our Constitution said if it ever happened, we wouldn't have any representation, we wouldn't have any Republican form of government. And they said it's axiomatic. These folks had thought it through much more than we have. It's axiomatic, they said, when representation becomes more than 1 to 30,000, there is no representation. Indeed, a representative that belongs to too many people belongs to nobody. And they said, history has taught us, we've done the study and we've thought it through, 30,000. Well, now a congressman of the United States represents, I think, over 700,000. That's nothing. I mean, do you know your congressman? Have you ever seen him? What about your senator? When I was running for Congress, I remember there was one fellow on the north side of Chicago that had not been in his district for almost 30 years. He lived in Washington, D.C., and they kept voting him in. Finally, a guy ran against him and pointed this out. It took that long for somebody to point it out. And he kind of fell by the wayside. Nobody cared about him anymore either. And that's the way it ought to be. If you don't care, and the only power they have is people thinking that there's something to the charade. There is nothing to it. I got into that mess, thought I might find out what was going on. I think I discovered some things. And then 20 years later, having contemplated it and seen more and had more experience, I realized there's nothing to it. Not a thing. And if you don't care about what happens in Washington, D.C., they lose their power. Now, this thing about ham radios, I couldn't resist. I think this is a great idea. And the reason I think it's a great idea, not because I've ever had a ham radio license, but what I understand about it and what I've heard these gents here today say about it and in the weeks previous, I'm encouraged. I had a family member that was taken prisoner after he was knocked out of the sky over Germany during World War II. He's gone now. But his wife didn't know where he was for 30 days. Nobody told him. Government wouldn't tell her. They didn't know. Finally, a ham operator sent her a letter. An American ham operator sent her a letter who had been monitoring the communications of the Nazis. And he got the name of Joe Armstrong and sent it to his wife and said, your husband's in a prison camp in Germany, and told her where. A ham operator. He's no hero, not in the sense that nobody knows about him, but he is a hero to that man's wife. and still is, and she's still alive, by the way, 95 years old. But those people that are able to communicate privately, and if there's a lot of them, got the government beat all the business. There's no comparison to what people will do out of conviction compared to what a man will. He won't do much if he's got a salary of $100,000 a year. He certainly won't die for his country. He just wants that $100,000. But you put conviction behind it and give a man $10 a day, and he'll die for his country if he believes in what's happening. And Americans have proven that for many decades and through many wars. But the bureaucrats and the police officers and those kind of fellows, they're just in it for the job. As a general matter, I know there are always exceptions to the rule, but why focus on the exception when the problem is the general rule, for crying out loud, and its problem? Well, for what it's worth, one other thing that was mentioned, civil rights versus fundamental rights. This is worth repeating, worth saying over and over and over again. Civil rights are the rights, and they're not rights at all. They're just civil. They're city law permission. Everything in our city law, and the principles of the city law, not our city law, in the city law, we are a common law country. But that city law, which covers and bestrides our globe, and covers almost every country, matter of fact, well, all, every country but our common law countries, yes, every country in the world is under some form of the Roman Code of Justinian. Even, in this sense, Islamic countries, Islamic people, the fundamentals of their law, their Sharia law, is the law of Babylon. It's all about the single will, and no matter how, it's a little messier, but no matter how you cut Sharia law, it's the will of the mass or the will of a demagogue. It's just the will. It's a government of men. What does that mean? That means of the will of men, the minds of men, not the government of God. And no, whatever they take for their gods, usually their god, usually as a practical matter, is a mass of people in a community, or some fellow they set up as the holy man. No matter what they call him, that's what he is. Muhammad is such a one, and then there's been a string of them, and it's loosely operating all over the world. They get to hating each other and killing each other after a while, and there is no real standard, as we say in our Christian world. There is a standard. It's solid. It's simple. It's just a set of principles that we follow, and our common law attempts to put practical feet on those principles. But fundamental rights, in distinction from civil rights, are those rights that are given to an individual son or daughter of Adam, direct, without any intermediator, direct from God, without any government standing in the middle, without any institution, without any pope, without any priesthood, without any organization of any kind or any person, given direct to the individual, simply because God made him himself, and when he made that individual, created him, he bestowed upon him, I'm quoting from our Declaration of 76, he bestowed upon him certain inalienable rights. Big word, that just means it can't be alienated from you. It cannot be separated from you. You cannot separate yourself from it. And those fundamental rights, unlike what people call civil rights, are not permissions. They are responsibilities. They are charging. That means a loading of you with duty. And woe be to you if you ignore those duties called your fundamental rights. God gave them to you, and you have a duty, just as in our common law, you have a duty to defend the jurisdiction of your doing of those duties. With every grant of jurisdiction, and there is no jurisdiction, by the way, Romans chapter 13, there is no jurisdiction, no authority, no rights, those are synonyms, except they come from the fountain of all rights from God himself. That's what it says. Now, I can believe what a bunch of legal scholars from Harvard say who hate God, or I can believe what God has proven he has said and what the ages have proven is reliable. Romans chapter 13 is a part of that. There is no jurisdiction. There is no authority. There is no right except it emanates from the spring, the fountain of all rights, which is the Creator himself, the Godhead. Fundamental rights are direct from God. Civil rights are not rights at all. That's a misnomer. Everything in the law of the city, civil means city, is an attempt to deceive. They're not rights. No, they're just permissions. Permissions, you have no more. And this is kind of fascinating. Kind of fascinating? No. It's eminently, curiously fascinating. Because it's without question that God gives evil men license. He's given them license. He lets them do certain things. We learn that from the book of Job. He gives permission even to the old scratch himself and his minions, the fallen angels, to do certain things. License, not rights. License. He didn't say, go out and do this, you have a duty. No, he said to him, I'll let you do this, but you can't go any further than this. The evil empire is under license, and God has granted, for some reason, to the leaders of the minions of evil a free reign within certain bounds to do certain things, and we are at war with them. Don't ask me why, and God never says why. Somebody said, why did God turn the devil loose, and why does he turn him loose for 1,000 years in the book of Revelation? And he says he's going to do that later. And the answer is, well, it's really not an answer. It's a return of a question. If you can tell me why he turned him loose the first time, I'll tell you why he turned him loose the second time. But nobody can. And God has chosen in his abundant wisdom and sovereignty not to reveal those things. But civil rights are from evil men. Evil men and the evil one. They are permissions. Permissions. And rights are duties. That's the difference. We're talking here about the fundamental duty, called a right. That's the old Germanic Anglo-Saxon word. It means duty. Duty. The fundamental duty to keep and carry a loaded gun. That's a fundamental duty to all able-bodied males in America. All able-bodied males are members of the militia of the 12, or I'm thinking of Israel, they have such a law also, are members of the militia of the several states. I'm using language from our Constitution of the United States, militia of the several states. We're going through the points about the militia of the several states, and I've gotten to talk about the duty of the militia, of the militiamen of the several states. And I think I left off back here talking about the law-abiding citizen. And the law-abiding citizen of the United States, again, you see, law is the answer to lawlessness. And the law-abiding citizen is a bold class. And he stands on the high ground of right. He has the pluck to defend himself, his family, his neighbors, and his country. But the naive person, the useful idiot of the evil empire, says government will keep guns only from dangerous men. Such silly talk demands that we trust those in government, the very persons that Amendment 2, without any question, regulates to that bunch the Constitution of our United States insists we must distrust. In fact, to allow government to choose who may or who may not have a firearm is to let political hacks and bureaucrats disarm their critics and crush them. And to this, history, without question, attests. Let me repeat that. Again, he who never quotes is never quoted. I'm quoting myself here. I gathered this, of course, from men smarter than me, but listen to this. In fact, to allow government to choose who may and who may not have a firearm is to let political hacks and bureaucrats disarm their critics and crush them. Listen to Justice Joseph Story of the United States Supreme Court. He said this, Amendment 2 is the palladium of our freedoms. Now, he chose that word for a very special reason, the palladium. The palladium, a palladium, is this. It's a two-part word. It means an old word. It means the symbol and the surety, the symbol and the surety of our freedoms. Chew on that one a little bit. You'll see what he means. Amendment 2 puts it clear. The security of freedom is possible only where the right to keep and bear arms is not infringed. The minions of the evil empire, the useful idiots of evil men, are out with a vengeance to get you to believe that your right to keep and carry a loaded military-grade weapon is a civil right. What does that mean? That means it's a mere license from men. A mere license. So they tell you that you must have a license to carry a concealed weapon. You must have a license to have this gun or that gun. Well, that's fact. They tell you that all over the country. You must have a license to do these things. That, friends, neighbors, and relatives, is contrary to our law of the land. Infringement. That's called infringement. And remember, every right in the Bill of Rights is fundamental, and therefore it is individual. There is no such a right, a fundamental right, and all true rights are fundamental, direct from God, remember. And there isn't anyone that is not an individual matter. There is no such thing as a group right, a corporate right. The union movement in America has tried to put that off on people. The rights of unions. There are no rights of unions. There are no rights of churches. There are no rights of groups of people. Rights are individual matters. Why? Because rights are fundamental. They are duties given to the individual through no group, no institution, but direct to him. And rights, therefore, the proof of this, of course, is in our courts, the only rights our courts recognize are rights that are offended, trespassed upon of an individual. You see, if a right is a duty, and it is, direct from God, that means government has no right, no jurisdiction to get in the way of what God has given you to do. That's the whole point. Government is under God, and God has granted certain rights. And government, we form governments and allow governments so that they will reinforce, defend, and keep any powerful party from interfering between a man and his duty to do his duty. For example, to keep and bury, to keep and carry a loaded firearm, military grade. And that's what the Second Amendment's all about, military grade firearms. That's why it talks about the militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The militia is, it's not something you form, it's not something that we start up. I had a guy say to me at a meeting down in Texas, a meeting at a big conference about the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. And he came to me, he had my book, Militia of the Several States, the book Militia of the Several States, and he said, so do you form militias? I said, no, I don't form militias. Do you head up a militia? I said, no, I don't head up any militia. I am a member of the Militia of the Several States. And you are too, and every able-bodied male is. I suppose I'm old enough now I could get out of militia duty. But every able-bodied male above the age of majority or minority is a member of the militia. And that militia is necessary. It is necessary that militia has the freedom to arm themselves. And that's what the Second Amendment is all about. People say, well, the right to arm yourself is only connected to the well-regulated militia. What is the well-regulated militia? To review again, it is a militia that is regular, always ready. How do you be always ready? You keep your loaded military-grade weapon and ammunition with you, and you have it in your house when you're at home. That's what it is. Well, people would have us believe, and I've read legal scholars that have said this, well, that's only, you only have that right if there's a militia to be a part of. You don't get it, Buster. Go back and read the Federalist Papers. That's a good place to start. But we'll go farther back than that. That's just one place. The militia is. It's not something that we form or that we invent and say, okay, now we have a militia. No. The state legislature does not have to act and pass a militia act in order to have a militia in your state. There is a militia in your state. And it's there by birth, by the creation of God. He made men able-bodied, and they have a duty. They have a duty to carry a weapon. Of the four militia clauses of our Constitution, three of them, grant power, grant authority. One of them grants nothing. That's the Second Amendment, the last one. It recognizes a duty and says the government is here to protect and enforce and allow, make sure that you can exercise that duty to keep a loaded firearm on you and in your home. Every right in what we call the Bill of Rights is fundamental. Fundamental. That means foundational. It's an old Latin word, fundus. Foundational. We change it a little and anglicize it and say fundamental. Every right in the Bill of Rights is fundamental and therefore individual. And being fundamental, that means foundational, straight from God, direct. No one needs permission to use the right, and it cannot be taken. A fundamental right cannot be hindered in any way except one, and that is by due process of law, which is to say by common law, because that's what our common law is. It's due process. That's the totality of it. And that due process, our Constitution and Magna Carta call the law of the land. Above all, Amendment 2 bars infringement, not only to protect the individual right to keep and carry a gun for personal protection, but also for a larger purpose, because it is the only way to have security without forfeiting freedom. A well-armed militia is the only way to have security without forfeiting freedom. The bureaucrats and the police forces and the useful idiots of the evil empire, the minions, will say to you, we'll give you freedom. We will. Just forfeit. Or we'll give you security. We will. Just forfeit a little bit of your freedom here. You give us your guns, we'll give you real security. You give us background checks, we'll give you security. You let us take away your guns here, there, in this zone or that, and we'll give you security. That's a lie. Not only do they not give you security, you don't have freedom either in the final analysis. Remember that quote from the beginning. Or no, I didn't say it today, but the only reason I'm quoting a man who said this, don't remember his name either, but I'm quoting someone else. He said, the only reason somebody would want to take your firearm from you is so that he could otherwise do something to you that he couldn't do if you were allowed to keep it. And that's right. I read history. I haven't read all history. I've read a lot, and I want to read more. That's always the case. A few years after the states of the United States ratified our Constitution, Congress, without a hint of objection, added Amendment 2, in order to stop any from undermining the foundation of our Constitution's other three militia clauses. This meant the personal right to keep and carry a gun and thereby overthrow the other three militia clauses of our Constitution and their single purpose. To emplace the only possible way to have both national security and individual freedom at the same time. There is no other way. Indeed, Amendment 2 bars any from bringing to naught the only thing that will bring safety without sacrificing freedom. Amendment 2 protects the foundation of the militia of the several states. Amendment 2, by the way, is the foundation of the militia clauses in the militia of the several states. There's no question about that. Simply put, our Constitution's foundation for freedom is the state's militia. The only true undergirding of these militias is each one's personal right to arms. No right to keep and carry a gun, no state militias active. No state militias active, no security. No security, no freedom. And regardless of promises, bureaucrats will never achieve security for any except themselves. And in fact, the Department of Homeland Security, so-called, and its police state forerunners, IRS, FBI, CIA, NSA, and etc., ad infinitum, ad nauseum, are the very kinds of creatures our militia clauses target as dangers to freedom. And it bears repeating, our freedom will never last without security, but security by any means other than the militia of the several states, acting in accord with our militia clauses, that means in our common law tradition, that's what our militia clauses are a brief of, our common law tradition of our common law militia, the old FYRD, F-Y-R-D, of the Anglo-Dames, shall always demand the loss of freedom if you don't have those. To sum up, civil laws, bureaucracies, civil laws, civil rights, which are civil permissions, and their bureaucracies that are put there to grant permissions, to create the illusion you must have permission to do anything. They promise police state security in exchange for freedom, resulting in neither. By contrast, our common law, which our Constitution is a brief of common law government, our common law bestows freedom as each state recognizes the constitutional necessity of every able-bodied male, every able-bodied man, to discipline himself to regular keeping, safe carrying, and skilled use of his firearm, ready to answer every constitutional call to, I'm quoting our Constitution, and ready to answer every call to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Those are the only three things that either the President of the United States or the governor of an individual state may call out the militia or any part of it. These are the only reasons that these two executives may call out the militia, to execute the laws of the Union, to suppress insurrections, and to repel invasions. You see, the militia of the several states can be used within the territorial boundaries of our states, to execute the laws of the United States. No, the U.S. Army, under our constitutional law, cannot be used lawfully to enforce the laws of the United States. Not the Army, not the Navy, not the Air Force, not the Marines, none of those. The armed forces of the United States cannot lawfully be used to execute, to enforce the laws of the United States within our territorial boundaries. That is why, friends, neighbors, and kin, our Constitution acknowledges the presence of the militia of the several states. The militia of the several states is not a creation of our Constitution. It just acknowledges and enforces its rights. That's what the Second Amendment is all about. Somebody said something about a while ago about the courts. You know, the Article 3 only forms, only gives authority, power to one court. That is the Supreme Court of the United States. In fact, our whole Constitution only establishes one court. That is the Supreme Court of the United States. But then it gives Congress the power. See, that's a direct establishment. Our courts are a child. The Supreme Court is a child, a creature of our Constitution. The rest of the federal courts, the trial courts, and the appellate courts, are creatures of Congress. That's different. And Congress has the power, with a stroke of the pen, to wipe out every one of them in their existence anytime they want, or any one of them, or limit the jurisdiction of them, because he who has the power to give has the power also to take. And he who has the power to form, to give, to form, to create the Constitution of the United, or the Supreme Court of the United States, has the power to take. And who created the Supreme Court of the United States? The people of the United States by the instrument called the Constitution. And the people of the United States, watch this close, this is important doctrine of our common law militia. The people of the United States are the militia. Are the militia. Most fundamentally, and that class of persons has two duties, armed defense, that's enemies foreign, and jury duty, that's enemies domestic, and to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. But armed duty and jury duty, that's the duty of the militia of the several states, every able-bodied male. That's the fundamental understanding of our Constitution when it was written. We must understand that to understand it, any meaning that we may draw from that now. We must understand that. And the people of the United States, which is the militia of the several states, are not under the Constitution, but are the masters of our Constitution because they are the ones that ratified it and keep it going, by the way. The militia of the several states, the people, back then did it, and the people keep it going. And it is the jury that underpins, and the militia armed men underpin all of our Constitution. Without the jury, in individual cases, enforcing individual rights, those are the fundamental ones, straight from God, then life, liberty, and property, by the way, can be divided that way. The fundamental rights are life, liberty, and property. Some are tangible, some are intangible. The right to keep and bear arms are intangible. You have property in your rights, and you have rights in your tangible property. You can't separate those. Life, liberty, and property. That's what it's all about. That's what upholds our Constitution. And the phrase, the people, our Puritan forebears, took direct from the Old Testament. The Hebrew phrase, ha'am. And every time you see the people, and it's in the Old Testament, it is speaking of an armed group, and most often in almost every case, it's speaking of the militia of the 12 separate tribes of Israel. Our history is founded, of our militia is founded in the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God written in the Bible. And that's why it has staying power, because it came from the Creator. That's all I have, John, for this evening. I've been talking long enough. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, we'll open up the mics. If anybody has any questions or comments for Brent, we'll let him take some questions for a while. Let's see. Let me open that up. All right, star six for anybody that wants to get into the queue. Any questions or comments for Brent? Star six to get into the queue.
Yep, star six and then hit a one.
And then a one. Okay, there you go. Okay, Ron from California, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Ron.
Yeah, Brent, I was liking that quote, and just recently in your militia book had read across that. And interestingly enough, I was reading some of the stuff you were talking today on the second militia clause, some of the things, that, especially that one word. But back to point, you didn't know who that quote was from, and I remembered seeing that in a footnote. And it's on page 9 of your militia book. And at the top it says, to be sure, says Granville Sharp, the common laws always require that people be armed and not only armed, but expert in their arms. Footnote 4, the only reason anybody has for taking your gun away, says Neil Smith, I believe is who you were looking for.
That's right. I see it.
Is to make you weaker than he, or so he can do something to you that you would not allow him to do if you were equipped to prevent it, which is a great quote. And I just wanted to share that. So
well,
that's
thank
on
you.
Page 9. Yeah, that's an awesome thing.
Appreciate it.
That's
by
all I have.
Thanks, Ron. And the militia of the several states, the book, it's our Constitution's answer to its enemies is available at Amazon.com. Just type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, and all my books will come up. It's all there.
Highly okay. recommend
thank- it. Okay, thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
Yeah, John. You take
okay.
care.
You too. Okay, let's take our next caller here, Brian from Indiana. You got the mic. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Star 6. There's no one in there right now. Star 6, except for Brian. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, this is Brian. I digress and would like to bring up something. I had an epiphany. Everybody talks about the New World Order, and this comes from G. Edward Griffin, and we don't offer, every form of government we've been offered is a collective form. We have no form of government that would offer an individual government, an individual party. It occurred to me, and I may be wrong, that the New World Order is a collective operation. The reason we haven't been successful against it is we do not have the same vision of a world individual government. Does that make any sense to anybody?
Yes, it does. And G. Edward Griffin has tried to, and rightly done so, and I appreciate it. He's tried to say, look, you talk about all the different forms of government. I'm weary of that, too. There aren't seven kinds of government. You go to the university, the Ivy League schools, they'll teach you all the different forms of government and how to distinguish them. It's hogwash. Nobody remembers it all. And the fact of the matter is, that's the devil's confusion. The evil empire wants to confuse with all these labels. There are only two kinds of government. There's the right one and the wrong one. Abe Lincoln said that in the Lincoln-Douglas debates. He did a pretty good job of breaking it down on more than one occasion. Through the centuries, we've had different names for them. You know, we used to talk about that my forebears, not me. The divine right of kings was a way to say it back during the days of the English Revolution and before. The divine right of kings. But I'd like to say, because I read a lot of law and I fiddle with the law a lot, there are only two kinds, the law of the land and the law of the city. That's the way I like to say it. And then you start breaking down the fundamental characteristics are contrary to one another all the way through. Griffin likes to say collectivism is the evil empire. Well, he's right. I agree with him. But he likes to use that word, and it stresses the things that he wants to stress, that he understands and knows about and has spent his life studying. He wants to talk about the difference between collectivism and individual rights. Well, my understanding and all the things I've compiled in my head have to do with law. So I like to say it's a matter of two kinds of law. And I think that the Bible stresses it that way also. Griffin's done a great service saying it is collectivism. But for me, it's even clearer to say, as God says, there's the law of the land and there's the law of the city. There's Babylon and there's the evil empire and there's the kingdom of God. And kingdom is all about authority. That's what the word in the Old Testament translated kingdom means, melech, the old Semitic root. And then in the Newer Testament, basileia. Both of them mean fundamentally authority granted by God in governance. But it's a matter of jurisdiction, authority, and there are synonyms. I like to say the law of the land, and by the way, my tradition of the English-speaking world, and that takes in a lot of folks, and God's been gracious about that, but is my tradition as a speaker of English in an English-speaking culture to make the distinction between the law of the land and the law of the city. Magna Carta does it. Our common law does it. My common law. Your common law. God has granted this to us. As Fratcher says, William Franklin Fratcher, I think I talked about him last time. He is the fellow that... No, it wasn't last time. I was on a radio show here not long ago, and somebody said, well, what got you interested in this? And I said, well, William Franklin Fratcher had a lot to do with it, but a lot of things came into play before then, but he kind of really focused me. William Franklin Fratcher was a prosecutor at Nuremberg and a law professor back when he was in his 30s during the war. And he drew the distinction. He was a comparative lawyer all his life. And he drew the grand distinction between the law of the land and the law of the city. He said this. He said, and by the way, he was a committed Christian man, a Presbyterian by culture. But he said, among the greatest blessings that God has given the United States is our common law. Among the greatest blessings. And the reasons for that, he articulated, and he wrote them down. He wrote books about it. And I agree. Now that I'm older, I knew him when I was younger, but now that I'm older, and I didn't see any reason to disagree with him then, the distinction became clearer. And as we get older, as we study, if we're committed to the truth, it will happen to us as happened to John Wycliffe. He saw the same thing. He saw the law of the land and the law of the city. He saw evil men's law and the law of the kingdom of God. He put it in different terms, different ways, because he lived in the 14th century. But for him, as life went on and he experienced the hardships of life, as we all do, it is said by those that lived around him that black became blacker and white became whiter. And what he thought was gray faded into one or the other. And I love it as I get older and as I wrestle and worry over these questions. Black becomes blacker and white becomes whiter. And the gray area fades away, and no, there aren't 17, 4, or 6 forms of government. There are only 2. And God said it that way. John Wycliffe said it that way. Fratcher said it that way. And many others said it that way. Fortescue said it that way in the 15th century. Littleton said it that way about that time. Justice Joseph Story of our Supreme Court said it that way. Justice James Wilson said it that way. And old Brent says it that way too. The law of the land and the law of the city. That's the way God has broken it down for us here in the English-speaking world. Notwithstanding, G. Edward Griffin has done a good service to stress the things that he understands about it. And I appreciate that he calls it all lumped together. Communism, whatever. Tyrants, it's all collectivism. That's what he says.
I find your definition vague. What I've focused on is collectivism says that an individual's rights may be sacrificed for the whole, whereas the individualism, as my understanding reflects it, under no conditions may an individual's rights be sacrificed.
You've done an excellent job of drawing the clear distinction between the two. I like the way you said it, and that's true because
That's Griffin, not me.
Oh, that was, you're quoting. He's good. He's right. I agree with him. And God gives individual rights to men, and like the Second Amendment, for example, to self-protection and protection of one's family. And the collectivism says, let's all collectively just give those up and let the government take care of you. That's the why.
For the greater good.
For the greater good,
of
course. You know, and Justice Joseph Story in his commentaries on the Constitution said this, there is no greater good. And we can have no greater
good. The individual who's talking to you good.
He said it almost like that defense of the individual's right. We will get the greater good. The greatest we can possibly get by defending the individual rights. Why? Because the individual rights are his duties that God has given him to contribute to everyone else. And if you block those, no man can contribute anything. The state becomes everything. And then we're going to trust the state to do all the things that this collection of men individually with individual responsibilities can do. Just like that ham operator. The government couldn't do what he did. But because men are free, or were free at that time, to have ham radios and do what they did, they were able to provide a comfort to that man's wife, a comfort to her that he was still alive, and gave her really a full report. I don't know if he was a German speaker. A lot of German speakers in America still are at that time. But he was able to find that information out as he picked up the radio frequencies, probably at nighttime, from Europe. And then send her a
letter. Thank you. I yield.
Yeah, you did a great job bringing that up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Okay, let's go to our next caller, Richard from Virginia.
Yes, this is not necessarily for Brent. I'd like to back up about the ham radio and what the NLA is doing with it. Would it do you any good if people started sending in like a down payment on the radio, or are you not that far into it yet, and maybe it
well,
would be...
we will have this up and running probably in the next 24 to 48 hours. People will be able to go out and buy them directly. They're not going to be terribly expensive. They're very, very affordable. But we're not going to go with the cheapest, and we're definitely going to get a good quality and not a knockoff to make it cheap or anything like that. And we're going to offer only specific, very
you know, things, that, accessories that are really important. Like we're going to try to find the best grade car antenna that we can get, the best grade antenna that could extend its use for walking around with it, and the best antenna that we can discover for the house that's reasonable. We may also discover maybe a home-based one that may cost $100 or $200 or something that would sit in your home and not necessarily move. And you know, but we are going to be selling them in a pair. You're going to buy, you could buy one or two or three or as many as you want. But you'll get a little better deal if you buy more than one. Of course, we'll sell a little cheaper. But anyway, so, they should be available in the next 2 days, I would think. Maybe tomorrow. I don't know.
Okay.
As soon as we can get everything, finish all the pricing, and get it secured.
So is that going to be through like a contractor, like with the seed sales, or the
Well, no, the purchase will go. No, the purchase will go directly through NLA.
Okay.
So we will be collecting the monies directly, and then shifting the monies necessary to go over to the supplier, who will then ship them and or program them, ship them. I would suggest everyone to get a program, so we're all on the right channels. You have to be someone who understands the technological side of things, be able to do it yourself to make sure we're all on the same channel. That's the most important thing here. And so we have to have a technician do that, and that's only going to be a cost of $25 per unit, and we're going to get a good price on the unit. So, you know, we'll do the best we can to get it out there.
I'm anxiously waiting. So,
me too.
I like the idea of your having a central programming of the thing. So.
That's extremely important. So we're all on the same page. We can move it around. We could be talking to each other, you know, locally, that is, and we'll be hearing things nationally that we need to be hearing from, and then also your emergency services. I mean, all that we spoke about. And we'll once we kick it off this week, we'll probably talk about it some more next week, and we'll do some more of a write-up on our webpage and more information and details. And for those who feel that they can program it themselves, you know, we'll give the detailed information of what we can so that people can do what they got to do.
All
okay?
right. Well, I certainly enjoy listening to Brent, so I yield for the next question for him.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, next caller, 630, maybe you can give us, I think that's Long Island. Give us your first name and state.
It is Jay from North Carolina.
North Carolina. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm on my home phone.
Okay.
That's why I'm
got another Jay
up.
Coming up from North Carolina, too.
No, that's me.
Oh,
I think.
No. This is a different Jay. Okay, yep. No, go ahead.
9023. This is the truck driver, Jay.
Yeah, Jay.
Yeah.
Your voice has changed a bit.
Well, I'm not. I'm on my home phone. I'm not on my cell phone in the truck. So.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, I had a couple questions about the ham radio. One is, what were the frequencies?
Uh-huh.
What were those five frequencies? And also,
the first five is called MURS, M-U-R-S, which stands for Multiple Use Radio System. Okay, and we'll be plugging them into channel 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So it'll be channel 1 MURS, channel 2 MURS, 3, and 4. When we set the scanner up, the scanner will scan through the MURS and all the other programming that we put in there, but it'll skip the NOAA, which is the weather channel that you'll have to go on yourself. But anyway, that's pretty much all the knowledge I have. You'll get your local emergency system set up, but there is a 128-channel ability in here, so you can get a lot more than that.
Right, I had one of those little bow things. It was a great little radio too. I sold it to a friend of mine, but I've got a base. I got a mobile station right now that I paid $200-$300 for. But
yeah, I'm going to see if.
But
we can
are there actually frequency numbers for those MERS channels?
I don't understand.
Yeah, there is, Jay. And I don't know what they are right now, but I'm sure they'll be listed, you know, on the site when we show the radio. It'll have it on the
site. Yeah,
spec.
We're going to have a technical guy talk about this probably next Monday. As soon as we get up on the site, then we'll have Bob and maybe some others come on and talk about it. Maybe we'll get Terry involved in this because she's big into the ham and she's talked with us before. And so next week, I think we're going to get, because we're going to run them through this week, and next week we're going to start the program off talking about it and getting into the details, get everybody excited about it, because we should be.
Okay. I just opened up Skype. I haven't had it open for a long time, and you're not in my contacts list anymore. So I sent you a request, John. Are you in Hudson Valley?
Yeah, I got you coming in. I just accepted you.
Okay.
I don't know
and
why
then
you
if,
wasn't in there. You weren't there before.
Yeah, and then if you, and then I've sent you some links to some radios that I've been looking up, and the, with the bigger batteries and everything.
Yeah.
So there's about 5-6 links there. But one thing that I found that was really helpful when I had that little radio was to get the lapel mic attachment.
Yeah,
because
we saw them. We'll probably offer that for people who want
the
it.
The speaker on that is so much better than the speaker on the radio, so you can hear so much more clearly.
Okay. Well, you sound so much different on this phone than you normally do.
Well,
I think they kidnapped him. They got somebody else there.
Yeah, they replaced him. He's not really him.
Well, I had a heart attack about 3 months ago and had triple bypass. And
oh, wow.
It's been
well, I was wondering why we haven't heard from you in a while.
I haven't worked for 3 months. I mean, I've just been at home, you know, trying to catch up on things, trying to get...
Right.
But anyways... also, Gerard, I need to get you too. If you can search for JZPPTP, means Power to the People. If you can, that's my name on Skype. JZPPTP. If you can search for me, Gerard, and get you back in my contact, or if John can.
Yeah, I'll cut and paste it for him and get you to him.
Okay, because I don't know why all of my contacts are gone. I just pulled Skype up tonight, because I wanted, while you were talking about the radios, I was looking online, looking for the ones with the bigger batteries and everything, but those Bofangs were, it was a decent little radio for the price. Is that what you're going to go with, or are you looking for a different manufacturer?
No, we're going to be going with that one, but there's a couple of different qualities, and we want to make sure that they're not knockoffs. So, you know, we're going to make sure it's a good quality radio, and we may pump it up a little bit, you know, for the extra 10 or 15 bucks or whatever it is to make sure we get something really reasonable. We don't need to go too high, but we won't make it the cheapest either.
Right, they have the 8-watt one out.
The 8-watt is the one I think we're looking to go for.
Yep. And then you can get the double size battery too. So,
right,
but
we're going to offer that as you know, if we can get the 8-watt one with a double size battery already coming with it, we'll try to do that. But if not, we're definitely going to offer the battery anyway, because people should have two batteries. And if they can't afford it now, they can buy the battery at another time later, you know?
But I also sent you the link to the little Mike Lapel speaker thing, and I'm telling you it's worth, I mean, it's only like $5 or $3.50 or $3.98 or something, but for the price, I think I paid like $6.75 for mine at the time. I think it went down now because I looked at the one for $3.50 and it said that I purchased that one already.
Uh-huh.
But to get that mic, everybody that gets a radio needs to get one of those mics, because the speaker it doubles the sound on it for a couple of bucks for like
yeah,
four
I was
or five
looking
bucks.
At them, and yeah, we're probably going to sell them, and I'll look at the particular one that you're sending and see once and let our tech guy look at it. And you know, again, we can't sell the most expensive, because people, it's got to be affordable, but and we don't definitely don't want the cheapest either, so you know, we're going to get something
I saw one of those mics in there that had that was waterproof for like $12 or $14 or something, but I just got that really cheap one, and it's, the price has gone down now. It's like $3.50 or something.
Uh-huh.
So
you haven't dropped it in your beer yet, huh?
No, I sold that radio to a friend of, when I got my mobile radio, a friend of mine wanted to buy that little Bofang, and I haven't bought one to replace it yet. So I definitely am going to replace it, because to have that little mobile radio in your hand is really key.
Does this clip on this mic thing, this sort of like, does this clip on your collar or something?
Yeah, it's like what the cops have, you know. You can clip
it
on your lapel, you know.
Right now.
Yeah, and it's right at your ear. You can, you know, you can have the radio on your belt, you know, so you're not listening holding the radio in your hand. So the antenna's a little further away from your head. You can clip the radio to your belt and have that mic speaker thing right up to your neck, and then just push the button and speak into it. You know, it's exactly like what the cops have.
Right, right. Yeah, I've seen that before. So.
And I'm telling you, it doubles the quality of the sound coming out of the speaker. You can hear so much better.
Good.
So.
Okay.
It's a mic and a speaker. Jay?
It's the mic and the speaker, yep.
It's a dual thing, right? So
it's not
only the mic, it's a speaker. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, let me throw you a picture of it, Gerard. Here it is.
So it's clipped right to your shoulder, so the speaker's right by your ear. The radio comes with a little earpiece thing that you can put in like you're listening, you know, to a Walkman or something. And that's a little mic speaker also. But I'm telling you to upgrade to this little handheld thing.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, because the speaker, when I had it in my truck going down the road, and I could barely hear it without having that mic plugged in, but when I had that mic speaker plugged in, that mic was clipped to my dashboard, and I could hear it clear in the truck with all the noise going on. So.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, John, paste me his Skype thing if you've got it before you forget.
All right, will do.
So I could bother him a little bit more.
Okay, I'll get it out as soon as I can. Anything else, Jay?
No, that's it. I just wanted to put in that 2 cents worth.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right.
Okay.
Good to hear from you, Jay.
We're going to do, it's coming, getting late. It's 11:30, so we're going to move over from Brent now over to Gerard. Brent, appreciate your time, and Lord willing, we'll see you next week. But let me pass things over to Gerard for a while. Gerard, I'm going to be away for my mic for about 15 or 20 minutes. I'll be right back. Well, it's going to be close to closing, but I'll be back in a few, all right? You can click the button for next speaker. Somehow
I
skipped the 630 number. I don't know why. Do you see the 630 there?
Yeah, that's mine. That's up. Oh, why did it skip it? Well,
yeah,
I'll go back. That's
skipped over to Jay.
Yeah, let me see what I can do.
Oh, this is 630. Hello?
630 is open. Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, the board's not showing. I'll mute Jay, and you got 630 is open.
Hello?
Yeah, who is? Yeah, state your name and your...
Yeah, this is Helen Donna. I've been on the call before. I'm in Illinois. I'm the 86 years old, and I was the lady that had the situation with the no driver's license. I am still in court, and people from NLA were helping me and are no longer able to help me. So I'm calling to get some advice as to where I'm at a point where I pled not guilty and requested a jury trial. The judge has thrown me to the wolves and just said, you either have to get a lawyer or learn yourself what to do. And at this point, I have no clue.
What's the worst case scenario if they find you guilty?
They gave me a plea bargain, which, you know, may or may not be in effect at this point in time. But the plea bargain was a $200 fine and court supervision for 6 months.
Okay, but you're not in jeopardy of jail or anything like that, right?
No, she didn't take
the plea, though, so the maximum is not that. It's, look, at she didn't take the plea. They don't have to give it to her if they don't want to. So she doesn't
right.
know if it's still
that.
On the table.
But she's not in jeopardy yeah. of jail. That's the key. You know, I mean, look at these people get out of control. You know, as long
well,
as
she's not
in jeopardy,
jeopardy
of jail. What I would do is I would, if I were you, look at, I make a federal case out of everything. But, you know, you got to know how to work the courts and figure things out. And, you know, you have to do the papers right, and you try to, you follow their rules within reason. I follow the court rules. Look at, the rules are great. I like them. I use them all the time against them, you know. So, you know, you could use the court rules, especially the federal rules.
If something doesn't
work, you can work other things around it. But you have to be creative to really do that kind of stuff. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
I wanted to interject the fact that we presented two very good arguments, which the judge just laughed at, made fun of, and however it has, you know, my case has
right.
been.
Well, here's your problem. Here's your problem. You're asking, you're in an administrative court, and you're asking for a jury. You'll get an administrative jury. You don't want an administrative jury. You want a jury of your peers under common law. You want up on the top right hand side of the paperwork. You want to know what jurisdiction you're in. You want that jurisdiction put there. What I do when I open a court case, and this is something I just started, I've come to realize certain things, and I also have a memorandum or jurisdiction, which I would file first. With my first paper. But up on the top right-hand corner, I put jurisdiction, and I put court of record, and I put a little note, a footnote on that for the court of record, what that means. But inside my paper, I also refer to the jurisdiction, and I refer to the memorandum. So you have to have that kind of knowledge really to work yourself through the courts. You're not going to get a court of record in a town court. You're not going to be able to move this into a county court or a state court because they'll never hear it. And if you, the only way you could do is you're going to challenge them on your unalienable right of movement, and also the big thing at this point is jurisdiction. You're in a kangaroo court. You need to get out of it. So you want to challenge the jurisdiction. But you can't challenge the jurisdiction in that court because they don't have the authority to rule on it, because they'll always rule for themselves anyway. You know, they're self-focused. And the only court that can really hear an offense on your unalienable right is the federal court. They're the ones that have the true jurisdiction on that. So they're the one. If you have a constitutional issue, a right of due process, and it's being violated, which it is, then you move to a federal court. Like I say, I make a federal case out of everything. I don't even bother dealing in lower courts anymore, because everything to me is a violation of my unalienable rights. They violate my jurisdiction, my right of due process, and a whole bunch of other things, whatever it is that I'm battling. That's where I take it. So, you know, I don't think you can go there. You know, so you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. If you can push them for a trial by jury, that would be interesting. What state are you in?
I'm in Illinois. We've already gone, you know, been denied when we tried to get the jurisdiction issue. That too was turned down. So I don't know what it is I'm supposed to present to him in requesting a trial by jury.
Right. Well, look at all in New York. I'll give you an example. Again, you need to be able to research some of this stuff and figure out what's going on in your state. I'll give you an example in New York. In New York, if you go into the Constitution, all legislative courts are courts of record. That means they're common law. They don't know that they're common law. They don't know that they're courts of record. They don't even look at it. If you ask most of these bar lawyers what a court of record is, well, come on, it's a court that keeps records. I mean, they're that dumb. They're that dumb. They don't understand. But anyway, that's where you got to move. You got to look to see in your constitution in your state to see if that'll assist you, and then start using. And then look up the. Well, you're in a town court, and that's a big problem because they don't really have rules per se. I mean, I have no idea what kind of rinky-dink rules they would have. And I don't know how the towns become legislated courts. I don't know how they become adopted. But here in New York, all courts have been unified, and that goes right down into the state courts. So there's a connection there. And all courts that are legislated within that unified system are courts of record. So in theory, you can press a common law procedure and a process in even that court. Not that it's worth anything, because the judge is not educated enough to even know what you're even talking about.
So in talking to someone else, they did say that I needed to do the court of records and do an affidavit memorandum.
Yeah, but they're not going to understand that. You know, Thornton teaches that, and we were using that process. You open a court of record on top of their court. We kind of do that, but then we make the move. Look, it is always the same thing, and this is what people need to get into their brain. The argument and the debate and the problem is always that they're violating. First of all, they're hijacking you into a foreign court, okay? So that's your biggest problem. They've taken you into jurisdictions unknown. All right, and that's where your challenge is. You don't belong in that jurisdiction. You need to get back into your own, and that's the common law venue. The other thing is that your right of due process. They're not applying the Constitution to you, so you're not getting your due process. You're not getting your unalienable rights. You're not getting the proper jurisdiction. All of these are problems, and they are not. They cannot deal with these issues. They're not capable of running a common law court, and that is another major problem. No matter how far you push them, they're going to be resistance because their mind is on a whole new realm than yours. They're lost in crazy land.
Well, I know they look on some of the papers that we submitted on two different occasions. They looked like they didn't know whether to do what or go blind.
Yeah, well, they don't know what to do, but eventually they'll figure something out and they'll do it. But again, moving it into another place, the only place you could move it is into the federal court. No other local court will take it on to begin with. Federal court will have to take it on if you make a federal issue out of it. You got to go in for cause, and a cause is bringing it into their jurisdiction. And you'll find that in Article 3, I think it's Section 4, if I recall, and you'll also find it in Section 1, you know, in Article 3 also. But you'll also find it in Article 6. And if I recall, I'd have to look at Article 4. I don't remember. But here's the key thing. Here's the key thing is that you go into your Constitution, okay, and you go to Article 3. And let me open up to Article 3. And it says here, the judicial powers of the United States vested in one Supreme Court. Brent was talking about that earlier. And in other inferior courts, as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. So we have vested one Supreme Court there. And it goes on, the judges, both of the Supreme and the inferior court, shall hold their office during good behavior. That means obedience to the Constitution and applying it thereby, and so on. But then it goes on in Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, this Constitution, and the laws of the United States. So if they violated any U.S. code, 18 is there, and a few others. You can bring it in for that. It's not as powerful, in my opinion, as bringing it in for constitutional issues, because again, it's due process, the right of the Fifth Amendment, right of a common law court to begin with, and the right of due process. Okay, common law court, I think, is Amendment 7. The right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and it must go according to the rules of the common law, right there in Amendment 7. And in Amendment 5, again, you have the due process. And those are the causes right there. That's how you get into a federal court, for cause.
Well,
you're not
sir,
going to be able to debate the issue there, because, you see, the issue becomes irrelevant once you win in the other court, because they don't have the authority or jurisdiction over you. You see, that's by winning in the court that shuts the other court down. It just goes away. You never argue the case at hand. You're just going after them for a different issue.
So, okay, at this point, I'm at a point now where I just want to give up because, you know, I can't deal with this anymore because I don't have the time to study this to the extent that I obviously would have to in order to handle
right.
it.
Right. So, yeah, the only thing we could suggest to people is this. Do the best you can. Don't get yourself into jeopardy of jail, and work out the best deal you can. Get out of there. Work with us to get us onto the other side. When we get to the other side, we can take care of the old business. You go back and sue all these people for damages.
Okay, let me ask you this. I should go in then and say that and ask the question if the plea bargain still is viable, and pay my $200 fee and do it with prejudice.
With prejudice. You don't want it to be brought back to you, or without prejudice, you could bring it back up. I don't know how you're looking at that. But I wouldn't worry about any of those things, because if you're thinking of Trump coming back and suing him later, it's all irrelevant, because it's extortion, and they're holding you under extortion, number one. Number two, it's not a real court case. It has nothing to do with that court case per se per winning it, but the violations that they come upon you in the process of forcing you to comply to that, that's where the damages are, the constitutional damages. It's a whole new mindset you got to really bring into the court. Everybody, you know, they fight their case and they get too lost in their case. But they got to realize it's all about the due process and jurisdiction. They don't have either. They don't give you due process and they don't have jurisdiction. So you win it on that level, and that renders everything else just totally irrelevant, because it'll never be heard or seen the light of day again if you win on the other side on that due process.
I'm sure you would agree that I need to go in and just ask the question if the plea bargain is still a viable option.
Well, don't ask, because they may take advantage of that. Say, just tell the judge, hey, look, you know, I can't go on anymore, and this thing is making me sick to my stomach. I'll just take the plea bargain. Let me get out of here. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask him. Just tell him what you're going to do, because if you ask him, they'll think, oh, you know, well, no, that's no longer available. We want $300 now instead of $200.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So watch out for that game. It's all about money to these people anyway.
So,
but I'll tell you, he's probably interested in getting rid of you anyway.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of that. So maybe I could ask, I guess it never hurts to ask if there's any other options on the 200. It's really tough for me for 200 even.
Yeah, well, tell him you need payments. Tell him you can give him $10 a month.
Yeah.
You know?
Just ask him if he's tired of you yet.
Sorry, say that again.
And ask him if he's tired of you yet. Are you tired of me yet? Well, if you want to get rid of me, I'll pay $25 and I'll get out of here.
Yeah.
You can tell him I'll take the plea, but I can't afford $200, and see what he says. And whatever he gives you, say, okay, I can give you $5 a month. You know, I'm on a limited income, and that's the best I can do.
Yeah.
You know, the heck with that. But
they always let you pay. They always set up a payment schedule. You just have to make it so you can live with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want their money. Look, here's the bottom line on these things, though. You know, it's good experience for court. It gives you, it teaches you, and gives you experience being in a courtroom, making an argument, standing up and standing for your rights and all those other things. So that's good for that. But to be able to really battle these things, you need some knowledge to move it to the right places. And, yeah, you need to understand how to file the papers, what papers you need to file, what the process is. You got to get the summons together. You got to an affidavit. You got to write an action. You got to focus in on the proper points of your case. And you never want to argue the traveling thing. It's irrelevant to the whole case, because they don't have the authority over you. So if you're fighting a battle, you're fighting it on a different level. They don't have the authority over it. They don't have jurisdiction. Certainly the federal court isn't going to turn around once it takes over and say, okay, now we'll pick up the charges and about whatever this traveling thing was all about. They're not going to do anything like that. But the state courts and the county courts, they won't even allow you to get into them, and you really don't have cause to get into them. And they're all administrative also anyway. They don't know what's going on either.
Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate your time. Thank you. I have joined your organization. Even though I'm 86, I can be of some value to the
local. We got a lot of people in the 80s. You wouldn't believe how many people we got in our 80s. Let me tell you.
Because I still have my faculties.
Appreciate that. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Gerard? Gerard?
I'm
unmute
out.
Yourself. Thank you. Unmute yourself, Gerard. You got the controls.
Star
there.
Six. Star
right,
six.
Maybe you, no. I'm talking to Gerard. So, let me hit the next button. Then I don't know where Gerard went. He fell off the control panel or something. 630. I think we just done you, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to mute out.
I'll get you out. Okay. Next one is Ben from Texas. Go right ahead, Ben.
Texas Ben.
You got it, Gerard?
I got it. Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Well, we're closing down in 4 minutes, so.
Go ahead really fast, Ben.
Go ahead, Ben. You're on.
Hello?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. My name is not Ben. It is Gene. But I was basically just having a question as far as when you're submitting a counterclaim, is it submitted through the judicial level or is it going to federal court?
You never submit a counterclaim.
Never? I never put in a counterclaim?
Never. No, they don't have jurisdiction over you. You turn everything upside down on its head. We confuse the court. We call usually the corporation that's coming after you, which is a town court or whatever it is. I don't care if it's a county court. We call it a creature. There's a Latin word for that. We use the Latin word on it. And it's the creature, so it's irrelevant. We become the plaintiff, and we make the rest of the people in the courtroom the defendants. And we go after them that by opening a court of record right there in that courtroom. We only do that on the county level or the state level. And then we make our case so that it's winnable and obvious. And they'll come and violate us some more. And then we move our case into the federal courts for cause. And we make the arguments concerning jurisdiction and the fact that they have hijacked this into jurisdictions unknown. We can use the U.S. 18. And what's the other one? U.S. 28, I think it is. No, not 28. What is the other one? Goodness. Is it 28? I don't remember.
Well, I do go to trial next week, and I've been just basically taking on the
court. What court? What kind of court?
Broward County. It's felony.
It's a county court, and what's the charges?
Well, they're talking about prison possession of alprolazam due to the fact that I had a dislocated shoulder because I had ended up getting jumped and beat up by some guys who stole my chain and my watch.
Right. Well, look, so, you don't have to defend that. Don't even defend it. They're not your mother and father. They don't have nothing to do with your life. They shouldn't be bothering you with what you do with your body, as long as you don't injure another person. Of course, they don't agree with that. That's your problem. But look at the whole thing. You got to forget about arguing that case. It's worthless to argue because it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Why argue the case? You don't have to argue the case. They don't have the jurisdiction.
So how could I become the plaintiff?
Well, first of all, I would make it. You got to. Well, again. This is, you have to have some basic knowledge of what's going on here. You have to see in the court how the fact that they've hijacked you into a foreign court. What is the jurisdiction of the court? Can you have the jurisdiction put up on the right-hand corner as the law requires, Your Honor? You can write your papers and put the jurisdiction, and you can call jurisdiction and say court of record and see once what they say. You got to define a court of record, put in a memorandum or jurisdiction, and then you got to hold their feet to the fire on it. Then they'll violate your jurisdiction because they don't have jurisdiction. They'll violate you there. They're sandbagging you all the way through on things that they have no authority over you. They're violating your unalienable right of the true due process. That court has not given you a court of record, and that gives you the right to go into a federal court, make a federal case about it. But then you have to be able to write the case, follow the rules. You don't want to go to a federal court.
I am afraid to take it to the sorry to interrupt. I am afraid to take it to the federal level because I know if I'm not able to make a difference through the judicial level and they see I'm trying to attack them through the federal level, then they're going to find me guilty. I have went ahead and put in an affidavit of fact, a writ of discovery, a jurisdictional challenge, and a criminal complaint against the officer who basically arrested me. And due to the fact that this is crazy, I was at my house.
Do you have a lawyer?
No, I represent myself.
Okay, and they're not offering you any kind of a deal?
They were talking about prison.
They haven't offered you a deal, though? I mean, other than prison?
Yeah, they give them a deal on the prison, John.
Yeah, prison.
Yeah, if that's the case, then I don't think you have much of a choice but to take it into the feds. But again, okay. You have to be able to argue. You know, not argue. You have to be able to write a case for the federal court. And look at the rules. Whenever you look at paperwork and stuff and you see what's going on and they write these numbers and stuff, you got to look it up and see what's going on
he was in his house. He was in his house. That
yeah, but he's not going to win in that court.
I understand that, but...
Yeah. So he doesn't have to argue the fact that he medicated himself. That's not their business.
Well,
you know, no one has jurisdiction over that. They think they do, but they don't. And your federal court, they're not going to hear that part of the argument either. They have no jurisdiction over that part. So they're not going to argue that point. You're going to be arguing federal court the fact that they don't have jurisdiction over you, nor are they giving you due process because you can't get a court of law. They can't give you satisfaction here. You got to get your due process. They're not giving it to you. So the one that can't give you the due process can't, once the federal court rules on it, they can't continue the case. Federal court can't pick it up because they don't have authority over that kind of a case. And you walk away from it. You beat it on jurisdiction and due process.
So I just continue on with the jurisdictional challenge through the judicial level.
Not in that court, because they're going to laugh at you. They're going to ignore you. They're going to steamroll you, and they're going to have their way with you.
Well, if they violated a fundamental right, and they think he's going to take it to federal court, they sometimes will get rid of it if they're afraid that the federal court.
Yeah, but those rights they have not violated from their perspective, and they don't think so. They're following code. As far as they're concerned, they're right, and this guy's a nut.
I don't know about that. You know, look at what happened with Ryan. They said it was the fruit of a poison tree because they went into the house and were served something, and they went further than they should have, and he won that in their court because they needed something to hang their hat on.
But
Ryan is a thorn. Ryan is a thorn. Anybody who comes in contact with these a thorn, and they all they want to do at some point is to get this prick out of them and get away from them. That's it. You know?
That's the truth. But yes, I am the same individual that called about maybe less than a month ago, which I was saying that I'm still going through an appeal right now. Where they sent me to prison for driving with a suspended license.
Uh-huh.
They did dismiss that case. I'm trying to go ahead and get that reopened again, but also...
Well, look, if you could try a habeas corpus, that'll piss them off too, though. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. We've only had three of them that worked on us so far out of 28. You know, we got a couple more coming down the pike, but we do plan on pressing the issue on the others that haven't worked. You know, we're not letting them go. We do have another part of the process, and... If those people are paying attention, they'll get in touch with us for that next part of the process, and we'll move that to the next one. But, you know, you could try that, but that will piss them off more.
And I am trying to get involved in the Committee of Safety as well. I've been trying to speak to the director. I've been emailing him for some days now, see how I can get involved. I'm located in Miami, Florida.
Yeah, people, look, at one of the things here at National Liberty Alliance, we push phone numbers. Everybody should get on the phones. That's real. You know, you're on the phone. It's email, it gets lost, it's forgotten. People are overloaded. They put on a list and they never get back around to it, and things get lost and different things, so on and so forth.
I have called. I left messages and I left my number, but I've been just getting the email.
Well, they should. You're calling the director. If you have a problem and the director doesn't get back to you, get a hold of one of the national leaders,
okay.
National coordinators. You'll find them on the top page of the directory.
Okay. Right.
Okay, and then they should be calling that director to figure out what the heck's going on, that they're not returning the calls and not doing what they have to be done. But maybe they're overloaded, too. And
that's what I was saying. Maybe they're really busy because so much is going on.
Yeah. Now, let's hope that's the case, that there's that much business going on. We're busy,
okay.
busy. So. All right, well, look, you got a tough thing. You could do habeas corpus. If you think you have the ability to move it into a federal court, you move it there, but never argue the case. Your argument is jurisdiction. They don't have it. Once they rule that they don't have jurisdiction, they can't try. They can't continue the trial. Once they rule the fact that you've been violated, that they're not giving you your due process, again, and you can win that in a federal court, but again, they're going to try to push it back on the one hand, You're not going to let you got to be able to not let them do that on the one hand. And the other hand, you also want to be careful because, you know, they'll look to go in favor of them if you don't couch your case right. They think they can because they turned administrator too, by the way. You got to get them out there.
I mean, from when the judge sent me to prison, as when I requested for a non-jury trial, and he told me I have to have a jury trial, I put in the appeal. I guess they've taken him off. He's not doing any criminal cases anymore. He's somewhere else now. But they did. Federal courts still dismissed the case. So I'm going to go ahead and see if I can reopen it up and take it to the Supreme level. But this is a situation here. I'm trying to get this out of my way and find out how I can get involved in the NLA.
Okay. Well, look, education is what it's all about. Do the best you can to stay out of jail and take what options you got. Try habeas corpus if you want and see if that'll shake them. I don't know.
Okay. Thanks.
You know, just go to intake and see if you want to do that.
All right. Thanks.
Okay? All right.
All right.
All right. We've come to the end of our program here. We're over time here, so we're going to end it right now. Appreciate everyone coming, and Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. And again, look, everybody needs to get involved. We have to get this job done. Let's get together on Thursday. Let's plan and get things going in your counties. Okay. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Have a good day.
Hello.